Here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, I call this meeting of the Board of Fluvang County Board of Supervisors to order. We'll begin with pledge allegiance followed by a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Do we have an adoption of the agenda? How did I know we were going to have a...
No.
It's not an ad. The only thing I want to do is under 7A appointments.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to defer that one to July, the July 1st meeting. And it's for a CPMT appointment. And CPMT made a recommendation for an appointee, but we did not know that there was others that were...
Interested.
So what we need to do, we need to bring the board, the entire group of people that wanted to be...
Rather than just one.
Just the one. But like I said, CPMT has a recommendation, but the board needs to see everyone that...
Why did we not know that there were others?
A little snafu, Mr. Weaver. Just with it, it happened right when COVID started and we had some things, so we just had a little mishap.
Okay.
So...
We all do it.
Yep.
Alrighty. So do we have an adoption of the agenda with the changes made?
So moved.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. County Administrator's report.
It's a quick one, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Music.
So just to let everyone know, so this Friday, June 5th, DDH has set up to do another drive-through COVID-19 testing in the county. We've partnered up with the schools and the Fluvang County Public Schools were nice enough to allow us to use the bus loop where the school buses are. Again, Friday, June 5th. Anyone interested in getting tested, it's different than before. You do not have to be symptomatic. You just have to be 18 years old and a Fluvang County resident. Now,
48?
Yes. So here's the thing. Currently, all the tests, all the available tests have been accounted for. Now, they are, if you call, they will put you on a waiting list, correct? So if there's others that are still interested, you know, I would urge you to call and just see, because unless maybe they get some more testing, you know, before now and the date, you know, who knows what happens. But anyway, we're hoping that if there are more tests that they do in the county, what's the board's will to maybe have it at a different location? We weren't sure if this was going to be a one-off type of thing, so we just chose the high school because it was pretty centrally located. But if they decide that they're going to offer more, we would like to then pick some other locations, maybe some more specific locations in the county. So I don't know if the board has any thoughts on other locations.
If you don't have any symptoms, you really haven't been around people,
You can still, even though you may not have the symptoms, you can be asymptomatic and you can test positive for it. So then at least you know if you're positive, and then you know you need to quarantine and, you know, keep your distance from others.
Have they found any of those?
People that are asymptomatic?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
Here?
In Fluvang?
Uh-huh.
I don't know the specifics on that. I would imagine so.
Okay.
What are we up to now, case-wise?
It was 92 as of yesterday morning, and I have...
So in the last month, we've gone up basically 15. We were at 70.
Yeah,
we were at 72 right after.
So every week...
We had the outbreak. We were about 72.
Yep, every week I'm doing
the
Rotary Town Hall meeting, and I give them an update on the number. And within the past week, we increased by 5. But if you think about all the additional testing that they have available, we're going to see an increase of cases if they're doing more increased testing. I would imagine
if people are showing up that are asymptomatic,
correct,
to get tested.
So, but anyway, like I said, drive-through testing, call, make an appointment. We've got flyers everywhere and the numbers on the screen here. And then just one other thing, just unemployment claims. Brian Rothfeld's been providing the information. Last week, under continued claims, basically those that are receiving it, we were at 6.5%. Today, as of May 23rd, we're at 7.1%, so about less than a 1% increase. But the initial claims for a full month period, they've gone down than what they were previously when I showed this to the board 2 weeks ago. So overall, I showed you a potential unemployment rate of around 11% the last time. We're at about 10.6% this time. So it's roughly being held flat right now, and we'll see how that kind of moves forward. Any questions on that?
And that was as of when?
May 23rd.
May 23rd.
Yeah, we pull our numbers. Their numbers are usually about a, you know.
And when did phase one start?
May 15th.
Okay.
Yep. And phase two's, and I'll come up in phase two for a future thing. Yeah. So, and oops, that slide should have been there. And again, you know, if county residents are looking for information, we have the website. Sign up for fan mail, Facebook, and Twitter. We get lots of information out to the folks. And just looking at some of your upcoming meetings. So we have a meeting June 17th at 7 p.m. That's a regular meeting. And then if you remember, July 1, we have one meeting for the month of July. So we have at 4 p.m. we have a regular meeting. And then then we'll break at 6 p.m. And then at 7 p.m. we have kind of a second regular meeting for July 1. So just one meeting the 1st of July, and you have about over 30 days off. So.
Do we get paid for that?
Yes, you do. Oh, you pay the same rate as you do every
I was going to go on unemployment.
That's all I have.
All righty. Thank you very much. Any questions? All right. Hearing none, we will now open the first round of public comment. Anyone wishing to address the board, please state your name, address, keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. Is anyone wishing to speak at this time? And I see that we have one, so Ms. Harris is trying to get us connected. Do we have...
Hello, this is Rudy Garcia, 802 Urbana Woods Drive, Fort Union. Welcome, Board of Supervisors. I hope you guys are all, and ladies are all doing well. I have 5 minutes. I want to not waste any time and get straight to it.
Yes, sir.
On December the 12th, the board met and passed a resolution declaring Savannah County a Second Amendment sanctuary. It is therefore be it resolved by the County Board of Supervisors of Savannah County that the Savannah County Board of Supervisors hereby expresses its intent to uphold, protect, and defend the constitutional rights of the law-abiding citizens of Savannah County, to keep and bear arms, and its intent that the public funds of the county not be used to infringe such rights. That the Savannah County Board of Supervisors hereby declares its intent to oppose any infringement on the right to keep and bear arms. And that the County Board of Supervisors hereby memorializes the Governor and the General Assembly of the Commonwealth to be at all times mindful of the rights of the citizens of the county. I'd like to contrast that with this note that came from Sheriff Eric Hess today. We have faced several months of challenges in our lives, but nothing could have prepared us for the horrific video showing the heartrending death of George Floyd through acts committed by police officers of the Minneapolis Police Department. I am appalled and saddened by this needing tragic death at the hands of these officers. There is no place in law enforcement for officers who senselessly kill or allow to be killed the very people we are sworn to protect. Law enforcement officers who show willful and wanton disregard for human life and basic human dignity must be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. My heart is with the family, friends, and community of George Floyd. Ladies and gentlemen, the Board of Supervisors, you have an opportunity to step forward and lead in a way that is meaningful. I implore you to make a statement condemning the death of George Floyd and recognizing the oppression that our racist society has put on the black neighbors and family and friends in our community. You stepped up when the white community came to you and asked you to support them to declare yourselves a Second Amendment sanctuary. And now I'm asking you to be brave enough to step up and declare yourselves in support of the rights of all of our citizens and recognition of the fact that we have done wrong as a society to a large majority of the population in our country, and that we have done that for over 400 years, and that we are not free of that sin in Fluviana County, not 400 years ago, not 300 years ago, and not today. And so I implore you to take that up as an action item and make a statement and come out in solidarity. Thank you for your time.
Is there anyone else waiting, Ms. Harris?
No.
Seeing none, I will now close the first round of public comment. We have no public hearings. We will move.
Just should we read the letter that was sent to the Board of Supervisors as well and enter that into public comments?
What was it?
There was a similar letter that came
out.
There
was a letter, and I'm not sure if the board had a chance to see it. It was sent probably
today or late last night. I can't remember.
No, it was just sent. It was just
second.
Yeah, I just received.
We talked
it
about
a half an hour ago.
When we tried to do that before, we said we weren't going to read
it. It was suspended.
I believe, didn't we?
Oh, I thought we said we would read it because we got some flack for not reading
it. No, we tried to paraphrase it. I can't remember.
I mean, that's entirely up to the board, what the board wants to do. I mean, last time we were doing that specifically regarding it was regarding
taxes.
Public hearing stuff, but I mean, the board can certainly, if the board wants me or whomever to read the letter from the young lady. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but
it's relevant, I think, yeah, to what Mr. Garcia's comments were, and I also had another citizen mention essentially the same thing as well too, that felt it would be important for the board to make a statement.
Did you get it?
Let me see.
Yeah,
it was from.
No, I can pull it up here. I mean,
I'm fine with that.
Fine.
I read the letter.
Okay.
What's she saying?
I have read the letter.
So, Ms. Eager, you said
it was sent at 2:30 today.
Ms. Eager, did you say you wanted to read the letter, ma'am? You're okay with that?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so that's three. So go ahead, Mr. Dahl, if you don't mind.
Sure, I will just pull it up here. Okay, so it says, let me just make sure I've got the beginning of this here. And the subject is Black Lives Matter in Fluviana County. To whom it may concern, times have been growing more complicated and emotionally distressing each day in recent months. I know we all are seeking out ways to comfort and protect ourselves, our families, and our communities. I want to first thank each and every one of you for the important work that you do. My name is Bailey LeSean, and I've lived in Fluviana my entire life. I've met some of you through my work with the high school's Alliance Club for LGBTQ+ students. I've met others of you during my role as valedictorian of the class of 2019 or throughout my senior year at FCHS, specifically on field trips with Mr. Pace. I've attended Board of Supervisors meetings for a multitude of reasons. I have a deep and personal connection to our county community, and I want to do everything in my power to make sure we succeed and are constantly uplifting those among us who need help in promoting equality above all. That is why I reach out to you today. Give me one second here, please. That's why I reach out to you today. Recent acts of police brutality have been displayed by officers across the country who have pledged to protect and serve their communities. This is deeply disturbing. We cannot allow that power that comes with a uniform and a badge to fall in or stay under control of the wrong people. Elected officials have had a wide variety of responses to the protests that are happening every day, some of which, though unintentionally, have been causing more harm. Firstly, I believe that transparency in all matters and methods of police training and government working should be paramount. An open dialogue with the community is necessary to truly serve, protect, and serve. Black lives matter. Black people face extreme disadvantages in our society because of our country's history of white supremacy. The effects of slavery and segregation are still felt today in a multitude of ways. Because of this history, we must support affirmative action and provide assistance to those in our community that are suffering the most. I do not know of any black interest group within Fluvanna, but I believe that it would be worthwhile to pursue a group with a governmental influence led by black people in our community, specifically for black interests. Mandatory minimum sentencing for nonviolent drug crimes is also an issue that affects many members of the black community. I care deeply about equality within our local justice system, and though I may not be well-versed in specific laws or ordinances, I know that convictions and sentences for black Americans are often harsher than convictions and sentences for white Americans who commit similar crimes. We must actively work to combat this. I also would encourage Fluvanna County to change the celebration of Columbus Day to a celebration of Indigenous Peoples Day. The atrocities committed against Native populations throughout America's histories are innumerable, but recognition of these communities can go a long way, in the same way that federal laws can improve conditions for those that are discriminated against. I have also contacted the Fluvanna County Sheriff's Office with a list of measures that could be implemented to help reduce the number of these horrifying deaths we have seen in recent years. White people must step up in these situations to be active allies to the black community. I've been educating myself and encouraging the white people around me to do the same, in addition to signing petitions, sending emails like this one, and taking other actions. I am enormously proud of the community that I was raised in, and all of my interactions with our county police have been positive and caring. My white privilege ensures that I am unlikely to face discrimination, but it also compels me to speak up for my black friends and neighbors. I want to make sure that every resident of Fluvanna feels this way, because we have seen too many officers abusing their power over the country throughout the recent days and years. The people most often affected by these abuses of power are black, indigenous, and other people of color, as well as members of the LGBTQ+ community, especially transgender and gender nonconforming people. Sheriff Hess's statement was a powerful reminder of what we can accomplish when we stand up for one another, and I was extremely grateful that the Sheriff's Department understands the severity of what is happening and is seeking ways to improve their work. As James Baldwin said, I love America more than any other country in the world, and exactly for this reason, I insist on the right to criticize her perpetually. I feel this way about Fluvanna, and I believe that starting local is an extremely important way to build understanding, solidarity, and love between citizens and those who represent them. Thank you for listening to and working with my concerns. I look forward to opening up a line of communication on further ways to protect all residents of Fluvanna County as I continue to live and love within its borders. Sincerely, Bailey R. LeSean, FCHS 2019.
Thank you very much. Alrighty, having heard Mr. Dahl finish the letter, we will now close the first round of public comments. There are no public hearings. We will move forward with action matters. First up is A, compressor storage and filling system with self-contained breathing apparatus equipment. Ms. Toller.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
This is for the self-contained breathing apparatus, the compressors, for the SCBAs that you approved last month. You can go to the next page. Again, this is, we're doing this as emergency purchase, just like the SCBAs, only because we have to get these purchased. We did do a grant, and these have to be purchased before the grant comes through. So we're doing these under the emergency procurement guidelines. Go ahead and go to the next page. And just like the SCBAs, we did apply for the grant in January. We will not receive a decision in time for us to get these and put them into use for the safety of the volunteers. So we are going to go ahead and purchase these as an emergency. The grant, if awarded, we requested $818,000. The entire project for the CIP is going to be at $939,000. There's a CIP project in that amount. go ahead to the next page. The entire project is for the purchase of the SCBA's mass air tanks, the four air compressor systems, and a fit test machine. This specific contract is for just the air compressors to be installed at the four fire stations. We issued an RFP for this, for the four air compressors on April 27th. We did only receive one submittal. We did have to negotiate with the supplier to get a system that we could fit within our budget. We got them down to a price of $171,431. This after this purchase, we will have, after the SCBA purchase, we have that amount left in the CIP. This purchase is for $162,062. That's going to leave us a balance of just over $9,000 for the purchase of the fit test machine, which will be done as a small purchase. So we won't be bringing that one back to you. Any questions?
So again, Board, this is just the kind of compressor system and refills for the SCBA system. Like I said, we brought you the previous contract from the actual SCBAs, and this is the companion piece to it.
Now, when we order these, how old are they? How old is the equipment? When was this built?
Brand new. These will be brand new.
Yeah, this equipment's brand new. The equipment that we have right now is past its useful life.
Well, I question that.
Okay.
It says test date, August the 27th, 2012.
Is that in?
That's in this, yeah. Test date, page 84. How old is the equipment? That's what I was wondering, if they tested it in 12.
I wonder if you're looking at, Cindy, is this a cooperative contract?
I don't know.
Oh, yes, this is a, no, wait a minute. Which page are you looking at? This is not a cooperative contract.
84.
Which page are you looking at, Mr. Weaver?
84. It's like the third line down. Test date, August the 27th, 2012, test one. And then the question is, how old is the equipment? Has it been sitting around for like the time? Or?
Is it this, I'm not positive exactly, but I might be able to answer that one. The air compressors that we currently have are not capable of filling the bottles that we are buying. Okay? We're getting higher pressure so they will last longer. The ones that we currently have only go for like 18 to 20 minutes. And that's if you know exactly how to control your breathing. It could be shorter than that. So I'm trying to find a page.
Look at the top right hand. It has the page number up to 84. But why did they put that in there? Test date, August the 27th, 2012. Does that mean something else? Obviously, I don't understand.
Yeah.
Without noticing.
Is Mr. Mayo on here? He might be able to answer that one.
I don't.
Chief Mayo. I think that some of the air compressors may be newer. they were made for the previous system, the tanks that we had. They're not capable of filling the new bottles. How about Chief Constantino? Is he on there by chance? Or Chief Fuller?
Okay, I see what this is. Let me read this for a second. I think this was quality inspection.
This was the test site was the New Mexico Institute of Mining and Technology.
I just wonder if they have it in storage since then, which maybe some equipment doesn't make any difference, but I'd certainly want to look at it.
Oh, I see time of them.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, that's what we're looking at right there. I think this was the original test of the
of the design, probably.
This is probably the original, as Mr. O'Brien stated, when this initial product came out and the design came out, they
right.
were testing on
the original this. Product testing.
Yeah, but this doesn't mean the equipment is, we're not buying used equipment or equipment that's...
Right.
I didn't suggest we were buying used equipment.
No, but the equipment's not...
Test date, August the 27th, 2012. I mean, that doesn't sound good if it's been lying around for...
No, I believe that is the original, when the product was originally manufactured, you know, the original piece of equipment that was manufactured and tested way back when. It's been manufactured since then.
But that's not what...
Mr. Weaver, notice that... on what's on the screen now, and I don't know what page that is, it talks about a time of rupture of August 28, 2012.
Uh-huh.
It appears to me what this was it was, if you will, a torture test of the unit to see whether it would work and how it would perform. And they apparently overloaded the pressure intentionally to see how long what kind of pressure it would take. And when they did, it eventually ruptured, but it ruptured in the next day.
In excess.
Well, it ruptured the next day, and it was beyond its design capability. So I don't think this is...
Kind of like when they do auto testing on a specific brand of vehicle. They test the specific brand of vehicle, but you're not buying that specific vehicle. They test it off a lot.
Right. Yeah, and if you look here, too, on each one of these... Oops, I'm sorry. If you look here, it says test date, test number 3, and then the next page it says test number 5. So I think this was just a whole series of tests on the system for quality control to determine what the product
right.
can do, the design of the product can do, not this particular unit that we're buying.
But we can modify that to simply say that there's verification that the unit was manufactured within the last 6 months.
Yeah, I mean, this is supplemental information. This is not part of the contract necessarily.
Yeah.
I have a question. 8 years now, it's been in storage.
Yeah, this is just some of their supplemental documentation.
Yeah, they specifically destroyed that unit.
Yeah, that was part of the RFP documentation.
Okay, do we have any other questions? Do we have a motion?
Get out of here.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the emergency contract with Safe Air Systems, Inc. for compressor storage and filling system totaling $162,062 and further authorize the county administrator to execute the agreement subject to approval as to form by the county attorney.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion is made by Ms. Eager and second by Mr. Weaver. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Next, we'll move forward with B. Ratify amendment for the supplemental appropriation of FY20 CARES Act funding. Ms. Twisdale.
This is to authorize to advertise for public hearing for the supplemental appropriation of the CARES Act funds. Congress passed and the President recently signed the Coronavirus Aid Relief CARES Act for 2020. It provides funding for different programs. Louisiana County's allocation is $2,379,202. We did receive that on June the 1st. It is here. We have set up a department for that so we can manage that separately so we don't intermingle those funds with anything else. The Code of Virginia requires that any supplemental appropriation that's going to change or increase our total budget by more than 1%, we have to have a public hearing. Because this is moving so quickly, we had to go ahead and send the Fluvanna Review the public hearing notice. It will hit the paper tomorrow, so it'll be on the 4th and the 11th. The public hearing is as of the 17th.
We've done that before.
Yeah, well, in this case, unfortunately, they didn't give us enough lead time, right. So that's...
And really on this, too, we really wanted to try and get this done and get it kind of taken care of in the fiscal year that we're in. And, we're not going to spend all the money in this fiscal year. As Ms. Twisdale said, we're going to set up a separate department to kind of hold this money so we can kind of better account for it. And then at the end of the fiscal year, there's going to be funds left over.
It goes to December, though, is that?
It does.
We'll carry it forward.
Yeah, we'll come back to the board with a carryover for whatever funds are remaining. And then, in a later agenda item, we'll kind of talk about the funds more.
All righty. Any questions? Do we have a motion?
I would like to know how this is going to be overseen. It's going to take an awful lot of accounting and filing to keep it straight. So who's going to be responsible?
Yep. So Mrs. Eager. So I mean, primarily, it is going to be oversight of finance because they oversee all the finances for every other department in the county. So the original $2.3 million, we're going to kind of hold the big lump of it, and we'll kind of get to that in a later thing, but we'll kind of hold it in one big pot, and then we'll have the board appropriate that money within that kind of department to certain line items or certain functions for how they want to utilize those funds. We already have expenses going on right now. We've had expenses, and in the later presentation under unfinished business, I'll talk about a lot of those expenses we've had, expenses that are going to come up, and things that the board may want to do moving forward.
Okay, so we're going to discuss this further under unfinished business, so that we can talk about it then.
Yep.
So you want a motion?
Yes, ma'am.
I move the Board of Supervisors ratify the advertisement of a public hearing for the Supplemental Appropriation of CARES Act funding for fiscal year 2020.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion's made by Ms. Eager and seconded by Mr. O'Brien. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. We'll go with C, FY20 budget CSA purchase of services supplemental appropriation. Mr. Moeller? Mr. Moeller, are you on there?
Yes, good afternoon, members of the board. So my request is for an additional $100,000 for this current budget. For this fiscal year, that unfortunately there's a typo there. It should be FY20, not FY19. I do apologize for that. The board approved a spending authority of $2,850,000 as a mixture of state and local funding. Based on projections a couple weeks ago, it looks like that we might come up a little bit short for the month of June. So we are asking for an additional $100,000 in spending authority. Of that, a maximum of $47,640 would be a local share, which would be coming from our unassigned fund balance. I say that as the maximum because the amount that we get reimbursed for our services, it really depends on our services. Some we get a higher state match of things like community-based services and whatnot. Some are a much lower one, for example, when a child has to go to like a residential treatment program. So as always, we always want to hope for the best, but prepare for the worst. Next slide. All right, so I just want to give you a brief expenditure history of the services so far. The item of interest is in the last 5 years, again, for fiscal year 17, we still hit our highest amount we've had to spend for the program, which is about approximately $3.2 million. In the past several years, we've gone down noticeably, as you may have seen. For fiscal year 2018, it was approximately $2.8 million. Last fiscal year, we went down to just a little bit under $2.4 million, which was an impressive achievement. This year, we anticipate not going to $2.95 million dollars, but last year we had a just an epidemic of residential placements that occurred on an emergency basis around the end of May and June. This year there's a possibility of that happening again. We've also seen a recent increase in the foster care numbers in the past few weeks. So we are anticipating a possible increase in residential costs. When I discussed this with our community, with our CPMT at our last meeting, CPMT wanted to ask for additional appropriation in the event that we do have that we do go slightly over. The odds of that happening, again, right now are looking pretty low. But rather be safe than sorry. For next fiscal year, the board did approve an additional increase in our budget to a little over $3 million. And we want to thank the board for that. I just want to show you why we're asking for that additional amount. Next slide. So if you look at our expenditures in the past 18 months, we've been spending on an average approximately $223,000 on a month-to-month basis. I also tried to create a little trend line for that. What's interesting this year is that in past years when I've shown this to the board, the trend line has actually been showing a downward trend in average monthly spending. This fiscal year, we're seeing a very slight decrease, but it's so small as to practically be flat. This is starting to suggest that our cost might actually be increasing month to month compared to the last fiscal year. And the reason for this is that we're predicting is due in part to two major services with that. Next slide. And it comes down to our residential and educational services. These are always big ticket items that occur because we're talking about a daily cost that is incurred either for a child having to go to a school that is outside the Atlanta County public school systems, or because the child has to go to a residential treatment program, which also has a pretty hefty not only residential costs, but also an educational cost. And it's that educational cost that needs to be looked at. So if you take a look at the graph that the chart that I have here, the projected amounts that we have for this fiscal year is listed in green. If you look at it, you'll notice that and pretty much a fair amount of increase of all services across the board, including our private day placements, which is in line with the slight increase in the number of students we have going outside to private day classes. Residential's cost, which while it looks like which is a huge increase from the last year, even though the number of children that we have been having to pay for has gone up slightly. That's due in part to the fact that this year we have had an increase in the types of residential services that we've, or cost in the types of residential services. So in Virginia, there are not all residential programs are the same. And as a result, they don't get reimbursed by Medicaid the same. Some we can get full reimbursement from Medicaid for the residential costs. We cannot get reimbursed at all. And others, it's a partial reimbursement. The weird part is that the less restrictive the placement, the less Medicaid charges. So it's almost like getting penalized for having children go to a less restrictive environment, which is very, very like counterproductive. But I am not part of Virginia's Medicaid administration. The item of note, however, is the residential costs. If you look at the number of children served with that reveals the true number of kids that we've had been sending to residentials or to residential placements. And as you can see, it's almost a 50% increase compared to the year prior. So we've been having this was a pretty pretty volatile year for us. Now the number that you see is approximately almost 2/3 of our costs. When I came to the board back in November, I sounded a warning that this might likely happen this fiscal year. Unfortunately, it looks like my prediction was pretty accurate. The amount I predicted for private day placement, it's not quite as high as what we're projecting to spend, but it is above and beyond what was allocated in my budget. As you can see right here, private aid placements, 10% increase compared to last year. And again, that's consistent with what we're seeing across the state, statewide across the board. The General Assembly's tried some things to help mitigate the cost of that, but we're not going to see any actual savings from that for at least another year or two. And so until then, the rates will look likely to increase. The big one right here that I think is really fueling this is this right here, the residential education costs. So again, when a child goes to a residential program, they the Will County Public Schools is still required to educate that child. So they are educated in the whatever educational program is run by that residential treatment program, and those costs are not covered at all by any Medicaid or educational costs. That is incurred entirely by our CSA program. So that amount, is also been increasing our costs. Now, with the upcoming year, I'm hoping we have less children go to residential treatment programs, but it's something that the amount of, that we have only a very small amount of control over something like that. At this point, I'd like to open or take any questions from the board at this time.
These services are not very competitive, are they? You don't have competition much in different services?
So in terms of competition, it's kind of hard to do that because not all residential programs are or educational programs are built the same. These are all very specialized programs, and as a result, deal with very specific types of mental health or educational programs. Like for example, one private school may work exclusively with children with severe developmental disabilities. Which can be pretty expensive because those children typically have some pretty intense behavioral needs that require extra staffing and highly specialized training, compared to a school that focuses primarily on a behavioral health component, in which the needs aren't as great, and so the rates for that aren't going to be as high. But again, we're kind of comparing apples to oranges in for something like that. On a residential side, the costs typically don't vary too much because most of the rates are set already by Medicaid, and they go by whatever Medicaid publishes as the rates for that that residential programs. The only exceptions for that would be for, like, say, a wilderness program or a campsite program. And this is a program where the child sort of like develops a sense of sort of like of self-empowerment and independent living through quite literally living in a campsite or wilderness setting. Or for what's called an assessment diagnostic program, in which a child goes to a program for about 60, 90 days, just so we can get a sense as to where the source of these children's problem behaviors are. A lot of kids suffer a lot, have gone through a lot of traumatic events, and a lot of times these assessment diagnostic programs can tell us where they're coming from. But even then, the amount of the cost between programs is pretty small to not really become a factor in determining the best placement for the child.
Thank you. I would like to have graphs in the future, if you don't mind, in that
graphs.
Graphs.
Okay. We can do that for you, Mr. Weaver.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
That's all I have.
Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Moeller. Do we have a motion?
Thank you.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a supplemental appropriation of $100,000 for the FY20 CSA purchase of services budget, with the $47,640 local portion of funding to come from the unassigned fund balance and state portion of $52,360 to come from the Office of Children's Services.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion is made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mrs. Eager. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair will vote aye. I can tell you right now that number's a lot better than some of them we've seen. Motion passes 5-0.
Yeah.
We've seen far worse numbers.
And we've seen a lot better ones.
Well, yes, sir.
Both ways.
D, ratify advertisement of VRA bond public hearings, Ines Crossroads Water Sewer Project. Ms. Twisdale.
The board originally planned to fund $3 million out of fund balance to complete the Zion Crossroads project. That was always put aside as a placeholder. During the budget discussions, especially in the light of COVID and revenue, The board decided they would like to debt fund the balance of the project. In addition to that, the Department of Environmental Quality came to us and said they would like to extend, like us to extend our water line, and that would be a cost of $1.5 million. $1 million of that the DEQ would handle. We had requested $2,750,000. There are some fees associated with the debt financing of about $40,000.
What percentage was that?
I don't know.
Are you talking for the percentage of what, Mr. Weaver?
The fees?
Yes.
Sounds like about 1.75% or something.
Yeah.
Something.
Okay.
Yeah. Usually they're right around 1-2%, right around that range.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
The Code of Virginia requires, before authorizing any bonds, that we have a public hearing, and the public hearing is scheduled for June 17th on this issue. Are there any questions?
Yeah, so remember on this, you're not approving the bond proceeds or anything like that. This is just advertising to the public so they know that we're moving forward with this. There'll be multiple approval processes along the way for the board to approve this and up until the actual, close to the sale date too. But basically what this does, in the advertisement, it says that we want to issue up to $3 million. Now, we're not asking for $3 million because, like I said, we're asking for what was the total?
It's $2,790,000.
$2,790,000 is what the total proceeds are. But if, during the process, if we need to get a little bit more or if the board changes their mind, the $3 million mark kind of gives us the leeway to do that. But once we move ahead, we're going to issue what we really need. We're not going to take out additional funds if we don't need them.
How did this work into the total budget? How is that?
So what do we budget for and budget for? Are you talking about for the total budget of the project?
Yes. I'm sort of curious where that stands in that budget or how we did it.
So we don't have the chart in here.
It was 2.75 that we thought we were going to have to pay in cash, but it came in $500,000 less.
Yes.
But that $500,000 can extend the line another mile to the west.
Yep.
So it's back to 2.75 with the $40,000 for the...
I think, Mr. Weaver, you're asking about total,
the
total budget.
Yes, I'm saying
total
budget. I want to see how that fit into that.
So, Mr. Weaver, I can vaguely remember the numbers here. So the total project dollar amount and kind of moving forward what we projected is about $11.6 million. That's from beginning to end. Now, that does not include this $1.5 million extension piece. Now, we're going to be doing another a 1.3-mile extension, and it's going to cost approximately $1.5 million. Out of that $1.5 million, DEQ is going to chip in $1 million to fund that extension. So that's where...
So it cost us $500,000.
Correct.
For that.
Correct. So add the 11.6 and the 1.5, and we're at,
13.1.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the 13.1, like you said, adds another mile and a half.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Or mile 1.3.
Yeah, covering the total million of that as well.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
And we also added the part down memory lane to begin, because the beginning project, when we talked about it, was just going to the prison.
Yep. So. But if you think about it, when this water line's done, we're going to have a nice long stretch of 250 for having water along there, pretty well covered. I think if we're maybe a mile,
eight tenths of our from Zions Crossroads to the west, 80% of the 250 will have water line at least 80%.
Yeah.
I'd say.
Yeah,
maybe
I think if we're a mile away from Albemarle County, I'd be surprised where the water line.
We're right there next to Fieldstone.
Yeah.
Which is Fieldstone only goes across the hill to Meacham.
Yeah.
So we're right next to the Meacham almost. We're within a half mile of Meacham when this thing ends.
They don't get Albemarle to buy from us.
Well, we've talked about trying to get it in.
All right. So, do we have a question?
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
I have a question. Yeah. Have you noticed the clearing on 250? I think it's right before the prison. Is that going to be an extension of Glenmore? It looks like they're getting closer and closer to us. Do you know it's on the right-hand side, you're coming towards Zions Crossroad?
Coming from Charlottesville to Zions?
On the right-hand side.
Coming that's in. In Almaral.
Yes, uh-huh.
That's in Almaral. That was Mrs. Eager, were you trying to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing you were going to say, that it's in Albemarle County.
Yeah, but what I'm talking about, it is getting close to us, and you know, we're thinking about maybe some Albemarle may need some water in the future.
We will have our water line complete, and now our next step is looking towards the long-term water supply.
Right. Yeah, we don't want to house that one.
Right.
If we can get some water.
Well, I think that new clearing, we're probably only about 2.5 miles from.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And like I said, that clearing overall, I don't know if they're just clear cutting or if they're doing anything.
It's a development.
It is a development, okay.
It's going to be developed.
I don't know a lot about it, but they have signs up for residential development.
Okay.
Brian Rothmel's on. It's his neighborhood.
Oh. I was going to say, he's a neighbor to that. Yeah. You got to drive by that or see it.
We want Brian Rothmel to come on and give you any info on it, or?
I don't need
any.
Okay. I don't think we need any, because it's helpful.
Go on, Brian.
It's Ravana Village. It's actually the neighborhood I live in. It'll be 300 homes with a commercial area. So, yes. And right now we're in phase one, so there's like 100 home sites right now.
So they're moving close to us, so.
All right, thank you, Mr. Rothmel. You're all over.
Yes, they are.
I move the Board of Supervisors ratify the advertisement of a public hearing on the proposed issuance of a water and sewer revenue bond in the estimated maximum principal amount not to exceed $3 million to be sold to the Virginia Resources Authority, VRA.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. All righty, we will now pass over the appointments. We will move forward with presentations. We have F. Park Projects Update. Mr. Spitzer.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
All right. I'm here to give a presentation on the final report for the Park Committee, which is set to expire at the end of the month. They would have done it for me, but they did not feel comfortable being around people right now. So that's why I'm doing it. You can go to the first slide. So the Park Committee members were Ms. I know I'm going to pronounce it wrong, but it's Krojewski.
Kravetsky.
Ms. Land. I'm sorry?
Kravetsky.
I always get it wrong. Mr. Hickman from Public Works, Ms. Johnson, Ms. Kilpatrick, Mr. Kravetsky, Mr. Pavlaka, and myself. And then they had some help to do some of these projects. You can see they're probably the significant others of the others, most of them, which is Mr. Bland. Ms. Belanger Harris helped with some of the media stuff for them. Mr. Nichols helped. Mr. Hussey is helping with a walking trail tour down the rail trail. And Ms. Plavaca helped with some other activities that we've done. All right, you can go to the next page. So some beautification projects that they got completed in their 2 years. They got 5 brass benches. They're installed in 4 places in the village. And they got 4 wreaths donated, 2 at the courthouse and 2 at Maggie's house. And Chris and Cornell are actually the ones, I think, that made those, that donated them. So they came from Park Committee members. Next, please. One of the places the bench installed was in Civil War Park. There was tree trimming and stuff done around the old courthouse, and I believe Mr. Hickman helped get that done with the park committee. And they're trying to work on removing the wall for access into the Civil War Park, which may be a project of EdTac in the future. All right, next please. Some other things that we've done, we got 6 oval signs insulated, installed on county buildings. In one of the slides coming up, you'll see a map, and they correlate with the map to show what happened in the town of Palmyra, or in the history. We've done 2 educational display posters, and they are in the courthouse on each side of the front doors. One talks about the courthouse, and the other talks about Mr. Hartwell Cox. Next, please. Some stuff that they're still trying to work on is getting a welcome to historic Palmyra on Route 15. That's a project that is getting moved into EdTac to get completed once this is once this park committee is established is over. The chairperson of park wants to continue to work on the replacement of historic marker that was right there at BB&T. And she's trying to get one for the Oakstone Jail and the Pleasant Grove House. That is something they said that they would probably do on their own as part of community service for the county. Next, please. And I'm sorry, at the top right, if you go back, that's the type of sign that we want leading into Palmyra. On the top right. Thank you. Sorry. Next. So a couple of the brochures that we've done is the Walking Village Tour, and that, like I said, was with the historic markers that's placed in the town. And then we've also done a 4 Miles for Museums program, which we try to get people to understand where the big museums are in the county. This is something that maybe EdTac will help promote, as we haven't had a chance to really do that yet. A couple projects that we want to get completed, even though that the park committee is going to be done at the end of the month, we're still going to build a kiosk outside of the county building. And we're still going to complete the rail trail nature hike, which Mr. Hussey is working on us with. That'll be done on their volunteer time with my help and Public Works Project. All right, next page, please. The financial report, Chris put this together, so it shows where they've gotten donations for benches and plaques, just regular donations, and the funding that the board gave them, I believe it was last year about this time, and some of the expenses we have. So right now we have a remaining of like $3,575. We're probably going to need another, I think, like $1,000 of it to finish the couple projects we have. And then we will ask the board what they want to do with the remaining funds.
So, yeah, this was one committee that you know, was a very active and project-oriented committee. They got a lot of stuff done. They did fantastic work. And I think, you know, it was just kind of at a point, this committee had been around for about 2 years now, and they've really accomplished. If COVID hadn't, you know, shown its face, they probably would have had, you know, a few other projects completed by this time.
Yeah, we would have done the kiosk and the rail trail, definitely. Yeah. So, but as soon as we can get everybody out safely to work on it, we're going to get those completed.
Yep, and then just some of the leftover projects, kind of what was discussed was, instead of, you know, keeping the committee
going. That's on the next page, too, Eric.
Oh, it is? Okay, so I'll leave it there then.
Well, you're good. So you want to talk?
No, you go for it.
All right. And then, so the park has an issues, and we discussed with EdTac putting park as like a subcommittee under EdTac. And that way, 2 of the members of park are on EdTac, so we could keep some park initiatives going through EdTac. And they've listed out some guides to what needs to be completed that we haven't got done. And the park committee said that the EdTech community's help, they will probably come back to help to assist with them if they would like them to. And then myself and Brian will probably be in charge of some of these projects through EdTech.
Yeah, I mean, and listen, I believe that's it.
Since they completed
so much, it didn't make sense to kind of have two things that are, some of the remaining things are a little overlapping that kind of fit into EdTac. So we figured we kind of fold what was left into EdTac and then kind of have the park committee kind of just, you know, they've completed their projects.
What's a ghost tour?
Aaron? You there, Aaron?
Maybe he muted himself.
Eric?
Yes.
Is EdTech still meeting during the pandemic?
No. That's we'll be talking about that also this evening, about boards, committees, okay, and commissions. But no, they have not.
So nobody knows what a ghost tour is.
What's that? Aaron, are you there? So, I'm not as familiar with the ghost tour, but it's from what I'm familiar with, it's about kind of telling you about what type of ghost may have been in a certain area and kind of, I don't
know. Sounds exciting.
They do one in Charlottesville, down in Charlottesville every year. And I also was on one in, I think it was Beaufort, South Carolina.
You were on a ghost tour?
I participated.
He wasn't a ghost.
I was still at least nominally alive.
Yeah. The Civil War Museum in Gordonsville, that is apparently like got a camera on it all the time.
Does it really?
It's supposedly that on it.
Yeah. You're looking for the ghost. Yeah.
It used to be a hospital.
It's in behind the barbecue exchange.
Right next to it there. Yeah. It used to be a hospital, so that's why there's so many souls there.
Well, there would be.
Yeah. So,
okay.
They have a prisoner in the Oakstone jail. That's pretty scary.
Well, I'm going to go there.
Yep.
All righty. So, okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Spencer.
Very good.
Yeah, like I got a text from him. He accidentally got knocked off, and he said he was sorry, but
he's playing frisbee golf. I know what it is.
Yeah. The ghost did it.
The ghost did it. All right, G, COVID-19 update, county operations, Mr. Dahl. Ma'am?
I have a question.
Okay.
I know that you all are receiving me late. I know you don't hear me for a couple of minutes, but I have a question about the William Young lynching memorial. That's going somewhere in Palmyra. Is it any mention of it in what I just read? I couldn't see the brochure. Didn't know what it was at the bottom there. I didn't see enough. The Emancipation Proclamation, I know I've been talking to Kelly about getting a good picture of that to put in the Morris Room. But I know Trish Johnson will probably be able to give us a little bit more information of when that memorial is coming from Birmingham, Montgomery, Alabama to us. And I think we said it was going going by the old jail. Do you all remember? Maybe you don't.
I remember us discussing something about it, ma'am, but I don't remember exactly what. And you're about 5 seconds behind, so forgive me if I start talking when you start talking.
Yeah, I realize that, and I'm wondering if in the future I should call from my telephone rather than use my iPad.
When I did it from my iPad, I had a delay, but when I did it from my phone, it was right on time. So you might want to try that, ma'am.
Yeah, I've done the phone before and it was a delay, but it may not be as long as this one is. And I can't call in now. Can I, Kelly?
Yep.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, Ms. Booker, you can, but what you would have to do, you would have to you'd have to probably mute your audio on your iPad and then just call.
Oh, I'd have to. Oh, okay. Well, let's just struggle through this, and I'll use my phone the next time. Okay.
Yes, ma'am. We'll get it worked out. Alrighty. COVID-19 update.
So I just want to kind of give the board kind of a brief, just brief where we are, kind of some things that happened from, you know, from county level, state level, and kind of what we're looking like moving forward. So just a quick timeline. So March 16th, 2020, which seemed like forever ago, county buildings were reduced. Usage was reduced to the public. We canceled boards, committees, and commissions with the exception of the board meetings. And we suspended parks and rec programs and rentals. March 18th, the county declared a local state of emergency. And that's kind of when the board started operating and meeting telephonically, and then the previous meeting on April 1 is when the continuity of operations order was adopted to meet from a virtual standpoint. And then on March 19th, county buildings were closed to the public. Like I said, county staff is still working, you know, just as we have been the whole time. You know, we haven't missed a beat in county operations, but we're just doing it a little differently now.
I'm going to add in one thing.
Yep.
I went in to turn in my taxes today.
Yep.
And I don't know if we can get a little bit better signage, because there was a lady there that was very frustrated because she wanted to go into the building to turn in her taxes.
And so we've been working a lot with the treasurer's office on signage, and we had signage out there that said the building was closed.
It was on my iPad that they brought this up too.
Okay.
They traveled 30 miles. Did anyone get that text?
I haven't looked at it, sir. I've been working all day.
And he couldn't get in there. I responded to him because I didn't know what was going on.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, the county offices have been... That's been no secret. County offices have been closed to the public since in March. So.
If we could get something like, if Ms. Lindher would appreciate it to be, for the taxes to be put into an envelope, like I just put mine in an envelope and said from Mike Sheridan and 14 Union Drive Academy.
Yeah.
Whereas the lady I was standing there with had her check right here and her tax statement and put them both in there. So they would have fallen apart. Now they got to find them and match them up.
We've gone through two different batches of signs up there. We had numerous signs up there, so we'll look into it.
What happens to the signs?
They're there. They just sometimes folks just get used to doing things the same way, and they want to keep doing them the same way. And
they don't see the signs.
Yep.
Or don't notice the signs.
Could you put envelopes here in the drop box?
That might be the best idea. Please, if you don't have an envelope, use one of ours.
That's
a good idea.
Yeah, we can do that.
Because I almost looked at her and said, ma'am, do you want to put yours in here?
You put it in an envelope.
And add your name.
Send it through the mail. Though mine gets lost sometimes.
Yes, sir.
So again, you know, like I said, so we've been closed. County staff's been teleworking since March 24th. March 24th at midnight, the governor issued Executive Order 53, which is closing... You know, schools, banning gatherings, non-essential businesses. And then March 30th, the stay-at-home order was issued and was to remain in place until June 10th. Since then, May 15th, Phase 1's kind of Executive Order 61, which is Phase 1, which is kind of easing business restrictions. May 26th, Executive Order 63, requiring face coverings while inside buildings as patrons and employees of essential retail businesses. And then June 5th, which is this Friday, the governor's Executive Order 65 is also coming out, which is for phase two, which is, there are other changes, but the big change is allowing from 10 gatherings up to 50. So from the county standpoint, as we kind of move forward, and nothing's set in stone, and I just kind of wanted to get some, you know, since the board deals directly with the constituents and then kind of has made, you know, kind of some thoughts on this. So right now we're at June 3rd, and at some point we're going to need for county staff as things have been opening up. We're going to need for county staff to kind of return back to the office. And we're working on some things, whether it's on a, I'll call it on a part-time or a limited teleworking basis, or if they're all back in the office full-time. I'm kind of leaning towards more of a hybrid limited teleworking basis. And, you know, some thoughts are June 8th or June 15th, which I'm also leaning towards June 15th. Gives us some time to get some policies in place or some procedures in place for how people come back and kind of what's going to be required and expected.
Are we getting behind?
No.
Okay.
No, but honestly, you know, the big, you know, kind of the big thing is the next one is, you know, there is a big part of the population that wants to pay their taxes, or they've got questions, they want to talk to them live, or they want to come in and bring cash. Well, we don't have an opportunity or any methods in place to take cash. One, we don't want to take cash, just, you know, we don't take cash in a Dropbox. We don't want to take cash in a Dropbox. So at some point, you know, the boards extended the penalty and interest period from June 5th to June 30th. So if we have staff kind of coming back on a limited basis around June 15th, our thinking is maybe about a week later, open up county offices on an appointment basis, but maybe make the treasurer's office kind of live and fully open. So that gives them more than a week for people to come in and get their taxes paid.
We just have to make sure we have that cleaned.
Yeah, and yeah, what we're going to need, we're going to have to do some roping off some sections in the hallway there, so they're just going right there. We're going to need to have a deputy there probably every single day to help with the distancing standpoint. You know, sometimes individuals are not happy, or they're having some issues with maybe why their taxes are what they are. But so anyway, we're going to have some measures in place, and kind of getting later on to the whole CARES Act, some of that type of funding can be used for that type of stuff too, for overtime. So thinking is opening up county offices then, you know, roughly June 22nd, by appointment only making the treasurer's office fully open, then maybe by June 29th or July 6th, maybe fully opening up county offices again. I would probably lean towards July 6th. This way, there are a couple things in play too. So it's after the board's meeting July 1st, gives 30 days, almost 30 days for some time to go by to see what happens with some of the governor's executive orders. And then, you know, even by July 1, the board's gonna have to consider, are we going to have to do another public hearing to re-up this continuity of operations ordinance that we're operating like we are today, with some board members participating virtually? So that's kind of just my tentative schedule for how we look for opening up and looking at some things. You know, we've seen some ways to do a limited standpoint of, you know, maybe having a requirement that employees are in the office for a two-week period, at least 40 hours a week or something like that, and then, you know, kind of staggering schedules to allow some distancing. So just any thoughts or comments or...
Personally, I would err on the side of caution. I mean, I think it's great that things are reopening, but unless the measures are practiced fully... You know, Virginia hasn't really seen any significant downtrends in terms of new infections. I get that there's more.
I thought it was just a very small downtrend, just a trend.
Still somewhere between 800 to 1,000 per day is kind of the average. Uh-huh. And that's, you know, still a lot. We're over almost close to 50,000 right now. Yeah. And, you know, I think as people come back to work, it's likely to increase. So. I think we have to be
make sure we got plenty of PPE.
Well, and that's kind of where we're getting on the unfinished business piece. We are putting a lot of measures in place, and we've got a lot of things that I want to talk to the board about regarding the CARES funding. We're purchasing hand sanitizers, you know, auto hand sanitizer stations, plexiglass barriers, full permanent glass barriers in some buildings, Clorox 360 fogging machines for buildings to do cleaning. There's going to have to be extra cleaning measures. But again, once we get to the unfinished business piece, we can talk about that a little more. But I just wanted to preview this with the board to see if they had any, yes, no, concerns, questions, do we keep on going how we are, are you hearing complaints that offices are not open to the public? So
that's the only one I've heard, and just happened to be standing there at the box with her.
Yeah.
I think by appointment only makes a lot of sense,
Yeah, go ahead, Mrs. Eager.
I was in the clerk of the court yesterday to file a deed, and they have it's changed. It's all completely glass, and they put in a window that's also glass, and you push your thing underneath it. So it looks pretty safe to me.
And for the later piece under unfinished business, I want to talk to the board about a couple other areas we're going to do some of that stuff as well, and especially those individuals are frontline with the public, day in and day out, and they're in constant contact, just to provide a safer barrier in between staff and the citizens that are coming. Any thoughts, any concerns? Does this make sense? Does it not?
That's all right.
And I think you were saying, when you said 40 hours a week, you meant 40 hours per the 2 week period.
40 hours per the 2 week period.
So they can rotate. I think some of the offices are doing that already.
Yes, they are. And so some offices, you got folks that are coming in. Some offices, not as much. But we need to get to a point where we're going to be more just across the board,
right,
with all offices.
Sure.
Yeah. Does the county have any liability?
Liability from what?
From somebody suing the county because they were made to go back to work, because that's still a potential issue.
Well, so under certain circumstances, individuals have some protection under FMLA now.
Jessica's on here too, if you need.
Oh yeah, and if we need to pull in Jessica, but it's not necessarily because I don't want to come back to work. I mean, there are requirements for what would qualify them for FMLA if they feel that there's an issue why they cannot. Is Jessica unmuted? Jessica? Jessica, are you there? You want to chime in on that?
I did not understand what Mr. O'Brien was actually asking about liability. Was that with regard to employees or patrons, or both?
Employees, I gather.
I was speaking about employees more than anything else. But my understanding is that there are already throughout the country a number of lawsuits where they are essentially, trying to say that you forced the employee to go back to work, and if the employee got sick, then that's on you, Mr. Employer, or Mrs. Employer.
Sick, they shouldn't be here.
The point being is that they're saying you are making us come back to work and not telework, if you would, and that you still haven't provided safety measures to protect us, and so therefore you're liable.
Fred, you want to speak on the liability piece?
I think there's no common law on liability. If there would be liability, it would be under some more creative theory. My initial answer to your question is to quote one of my favorite teachers in law school when he was asked, can you sue for that? And the answer is you can always sue. The question is whether you can win. And I think the real question would be, what's the nature of the claim? So if the claim was that there was some obvious problem that the supervisor refused to address, I could conceive that being maybe getting by a motion to strike, but not generally. You might have a workman's comp. I don't know exactly how to address that, but. That's another possibility.
And we have the sheriff on the line too. He's got a, he would like to make a few comments too, not necessarily about the liability piece, but I think just around the discussion in general, if the board would allow.
Sheriff Hess?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes,
can
sir.
Can you hear me?
Yes. I had something I would like to bring up as to talk about those of us that had to come to work, public service, public works, everybody that's cleaning the buildings for us, as well as the deputies and dispatchers. Is there any possibility to give them some type of a bonus or hourly a hazardous duty pay during the time they work during COVID as part of this CARES Act?
So the answer is there is yes, and during the next piece, during the unfinished business piece, we can certainly discuss that in further discussion regarding uses of the funds, but
only to the extent that services were performed in addition to their regular services.
No, that's not what we understand 100%.
Yeah, that's what the statute. That's what it says.
Marianne, we'll have to.
Yeah, let's wrap this up and then go into that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a discussion we could have because we talked about that.
Yeah, Sheriff Hassan, if like when we get the unfinished business, I mean, we're going to be talking about uses of funds. If you want to chime in on that, that would be a good time, and we can have a discussion about that.
Well, I mean,
absolutely. I just wanted to put it out there because I think everybody has really stepped up to the plate and really worked hard during this time, and for those that had to come in and continue what they do on a daily basis, some extra recognition in some way would be, be a pretty good morale booster too.
Yes, sir. I mean, that's something we'll talk about later.
Are the workers wearing masks and staying 6 feet apart?
Yes, ma'am. Anytime you're encountering somebody and you're going to get anywhere near 6 feet of them, you should have your mask on. Of course, a lot of times we have to get a lot closer than that. But we've done a good job so far. It was a learning curve getting to educate people to do that, including myself. But it's for our safety as well as other people's safety. And the use of latex gloves and cleaning our vehicles every time somebody's transported. We've had to readapt to how we do business. And it's been a learning curve, but I think everybody's really gotten into the swing of it now, and it may become the new norm for a long time.
Yes, and I've also met the office workers. When they come back, do they have to wear masks at all times?
So,
treasury department, community people, you have to be 6 feet apart. All of that's going to occur when you come back.
So
in July, I believe it is, or June.
Yes. Yeah, so Mrs. Booker and Fred, do you want to comment on this too? I mean, so after some discussion with the county attorney's office regarding executive order, which one is it? 63 regarding the requirements for masks, and talking with Mr. Payne, we sent out, I sent out a memo to staff regarding, interpretation of it from a legal standpoint. So executive order 63 states there's a directive for patrons going into businesses, county buildings, that you are required to wear a mask. Now, there are certain exceptions for those that do not feel that they should wear a mask. And then there is some specifics to essential businesses and, other retail businesses that have been open. My recommendation from a county staff standpoint was, if you're in your own individual office, do you need to wear a mask? No. If you can maintain a distance of social distancing, then again, not necessarily. But if you're dealing, anytime if you're dealing with the public, and if you're dealing with individuals where you cannot, maintain some distance, then maybe you should. So that's been some of the things, you know, if you're out and about, if someone's cutting the grass and they're out in the middle of Pleasant Grove, do they need to wear a mask? No, but they should have a mask with them if they come into contact or are communicating with anyone from the public or anything like that, or if, you know, two of them get back into a vehicle with, you know, with one another and they don't have the space there. Those are the types of guidance that we put forward.
Do they put a new mask on every day?
So the recommendation is the county will provide, we have surgical masks that we will provide for staff, and depending upon what type of risk you're in, there's surgical masks or there's N95s. N95s are meant more for first responders, whereas the surgical masks, we have been providing those. We've provided surgical masks to every single department, constitutional office. So we have a good supply of those for those departments. In addition, you know, we're looking at plexiglass and a lot of other items as well.
Right. Thank you.
Alrighty. The
only comments I would have, the later the better, is my opinion. Yeah.
So maybe not fully opening up to the public on those other dates, or
I didn't see anything wrong with your sequence that you did there. It sounded good to me. I mean, how long are we gonna?
And if things change, we can always adjust it.
Yeah,
we can. Like I said, there's nothing set in stone in this, but I think we're you know, we're at a point where I think we just need to.
I think the July 6th date right now is a good one to put out there, and if we have to adjust it July 1st, we just say something July 1st.
We could do that.
Same thing with June 15th. I mean, you know, the reality is things got loosened up 2 weeks ago. Virus takes about 2 weeks to spread.
Yep.
You know, so 3 weeks, 4 weeks, you should have a good sense as to whether things are progressing or not. You know?
It's nice to have a date out there,
yeah.
And we can adjust the date as needed.
Yeah, and for you know, it's just about, you know, getting some a little more consistency back with county operations. And it's not that we're not doing what we need, but it's certainly, you know, we want to stagger. I mean, if we do come back, I'm not necessarily for the full time basis on either one of those dates coming back where everyone's back, but I would see maybe more of a limited teleworking standpoint.
I liked your staggering thing.
So,
it's your staggering thing, then everybody gets time in the office.
Yeah.
Everybody's getting time at the house to do the stuff with the teleworking. So. Now, the treasurer's office, they might have to be fully staffed.
And what would...
If people are rolling in there, and so they don't get overwhelmed.
And...
Well, I've talked to Ms. Lynn here, too, about her staff.
And
you know,
what would have to...
Go on, Ms. Booker, I'm sorry.
I asked, what would have to happen that we would change, that you would make a drastic change? Would it be because we have more cases in Fluvanna? What would have to occurred for us to say, no, we can't go back June 29th or July the 6th.
My guess.
One obvious thing of that is whatever the governor might do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. My guess is we're going to be told that by things. I mean, that will be our decision.
Yeah, from the governor's office, that is kind of the ultimate guiding authority. You know, from Fluvanna's standpoint, you know, just because we get maybe 10 cases in a month doesn't necessarily mean that we've got an outbreak happening in Fluvanna County. And, you know, it may be that we're doing more testing now. So I think the strong guidance would come from the governor's office or would change what we're planning on doing.
Okay.
And you know, as of this this Friday, June 5th, they are opening up, you know, to allow for up to, you know, gatherings of 50. And I'm not saying we want to do that. And I'm not saying we want to, you know, gather 50 people in the county admin building or anywhere else. But I think just getting back to
norm.
Something of a modified norm.
They're allowing 50, but like restaurants, they're only, I think I've heard them today say it's
50%.
Is it 50% or
right.
something?
50%.
Oh, the gyms were 30%. Yeah. That's what it was
30%. Yeah, I mean, the 50 is generally speaking, but there's lots of guidelines.
Me too.
So.
All right. So, okay. And we're going to have this discussion here in about 10 minutes again.
Yeah, we're going to talk more about the use of funds. So if the board has any other questions, and then again, this is just kind of looking at the dates. You know, we're here at June 3rd, June 30th, and like I said, that's just kind of the tax time. And Ms. Lender, I spoke to Ms. Lender a little bit today, too, about some of that. And maybe if we did most county offices appointment only, but if we did for her office, you know, at some point we're going to have to open up her office for people to come in there.
To me, her office is probably the best one to do that with because of all the new things that we did there.
Yeah.
Her people will have the least amount of contact. They've got the screens already there. They got to push the stuff underneath.
Yeah.
There's no chance of it to be passed. Across.
I don't want
to,
from when.
With the windows. And they're probably, it's unlike the commissioner's office. If you go across the hall, it's just open space.
Well, that's going to change too.
I figured it was. But I mean, so they're probably better suited for it than anyone else.
So anyway, that's.
All right.
And then just one other thing here too, and this is kind of added to it a little bit, just some more of the discussion. So we're going to start moving forward and maybe talk to Mr. Payne about this, about boards, commissions, and committees starting to meet again, but maybe more in a virtual standpoint. For instance, I know we got the Planning Commission meeting this month coming up. They're meeting virtually, and we want to start kind of getting other boards, commissions, and committees. And the guidance that came out from the General Assembly allows us to do that. Correct, Mr. Payne?
Yes.
Yeah.
They're meeting virtually in the same sense that you are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that my understanding is that the members of the Planning Commission are all planning to be present at the meeting, but there will be limited public interaction.
Yeah.
With the exception of Mrs. Eager.
Yes.
With the exception of Mrs.
Eager. Yep. Some other things too. Parks and Rec. You know, we're getting to a point where. You've got some localities that said we don't want any Parks and Rec programs or classes going on, and we've got some that are doing it in a limited fashion. After speaking with Mr. Spitzer, you know, I don't necessarily think that we want to have a summer camp where you have 50 kids all together running around, but, you know, I asked him, you know, could you come up with a program that you can do that's maybe a little more, you know, not such big groups, you know, maybe like going like some like kayak tours down, you know, in Lake Monticello or the river, or maybe doing some you know, small hikes in the trails, some other things like that. Some of the classes that we have going on, you know, for instance, there's some dog training classes. Those have been taking part down at the community center. Well, some of the thoughts were, well, maybe we could have some of those classes take part, you know, maybe under the pole barn at Pleasant Grove to still have some of the classes happening, but they're outside and kind of doing a different environment and being in a smaller class sizes. Does the board have anything against doing anything like that?
I can tell you, Richmond and
sounds good.
Richmond and Williamsburg right now are actually opening up. They're having baseball tournaments start.
Okay.
I'm just, you know, just sitting here talking to some of the guys I've seen. Their kids are going to travel baseball tournaments this weekend.
Yeah.
So that's starting to open back up, and those are the hotbed places.
They are.
And we do have masks for children.
Yes, and like I said, the age that this would be for, and I have to get with Mr. Spitzer because I think it's for age 7 to maybe 13 or something like that. Now, under a certain age, you don't necessarily want to put masks, but yes, there would be protective measures in place. But that's just if the board, you know, if those types of programs would seem reasonable.
Once again, I think it's reasonable to start working towards that, and then we're just going to have to wait and see what happens above us.
Because for Mr. Spitzer, at this point, if he wants to start doing stuff like that come July, and what we're talking, this would be after 4th of July, maybe doing some of these like little one-day programs or something like that, going out and, you know, kayaking with maybe a group of six or something. So we're not sure.
Mr. Weaver?
I think it's good.
Mr. O'Brien?
I mean, if the board has some hesitation about that, then we can certainly do that. And you know, Mr. Spitzer, and the next thing, he's getting called daily from Fluvanna Youth Baseball, Fluvanna Youth Softball to start having not games, but they want to start practicing with, you know, what do they have, you know, I don't know, 12, 13 kids on a team, you know, I don't know.
Ms. Seeger, how do you feel?
Should we not have written instructions if we are going to have kids come at baseball and so forth, so that every coach will have the same directions and not just word of mouth?
That's a good point, Mrs. Seeger.
Okay. I mean, I think any of these things, if the coach should take the temperature of every kid. You know, I mean, that's just the standard stuff that you would do in those types of situations where you're going to have close contact. I mean, realistically, if you got 15, 20 kids together and one of them is infected, you're going to have 15 kids get infected.
No, like I said, that one I know.
And we
could purchase those forehead monitors without care money.
Yeah. We could. I just ordered
two of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, I know both of these leagues are looking for some direction. Can they start, you know, renting the fields again to have this? And up to this point, I haven't been, you know, ready to do that for a group of that size. But with the governor's, you know, opening up of outside activities in groups of 50, I'm not sure what the board's thoughts were on that.
I think y'all have a lot of guidance in the next 3 to 4 weeks.
Well, and there's a lot of guidance that they have to follow from the little leagues and some things that they have to follow. And there's obviously other guidance that has to be followed as well from coming out from, you know, whether it's or from the governor's office.
I think you talked about the groups of 15. That's starting Friday, so that's why they've said, okay, now we can start doing the travel baseball.
Yeah, I mean, they were even inquiring prior to this, and up to that point, I was not in favor of
I haven't seen
them
anybody
starting,
practicing anywhere.
No, well, they shouldn't have been because they're
in fields.
Oh, okay.
So anywhere else?
And what's going on at the park now? Do they allow people to come in and take a walk?
The Pleasant Grove Park is open for people to hike, for people to go and bring their dogs. You just limited gatherings of people. You know, obviously, if you and your family come to the park and you want to go hiking, you can hike with, you know, you, your spouse and your two kids, since you've lived in the same household and you're driving there together. But we, you know, Mr. Spitzer and we've got signage, you know, discouraging, you know, social distancing while you're, you know, at the dog park, or whether you're, you know, at Sandy Beach or you're at other areas. But, you know, so yes, the parks are open, but they're being utilized. And they probably, it's probably been a good asset. There's probably been folks that have probably really realized what we have for a great park there than previously. Just kind of
if we're going to do the forehead thermometer thing, we better get an order in.
Yeah.
because those are back ordered everywhere.
And Mr. Payne, from that, is that something that we would purchase for the county?
I think we can.
Okay. Yeah,
if we're going to require them to do it.
Yeah, it's been one of the things that the federal guidance provides is expenses associated with the provision of economic support and COVID-19 related expenses of maintaining jails, things like that, and grants to small businesses to reimburse the cost of business interruption, various things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's one thing that, that the county could do with the CARES money.
So we'll talk about that, but is the board willing to allow these leagues to kind of come in there if there's strict guidelines for what they have to follow, and they've got to give us some proper procedures that they are, that they're following in place?
I have no problem.
I don't either.
With strict guidelines only.
What's that?
With strict guidelines only.
Because until things open up a little bit more, I mean, like I said, I don't think we're at the point where we've got two teams on the field and then you got every parent.
Right. I think they're just looking to practice with 13 kids. But like you said, you don't want one kid to infect anyone, but that could happen at the lake. I mean, then, you know, because they're down there swimming and stuff of that nature.
So Mr. Spitzer said he would recommend practice only, no games until phase three.
Correct.
So.
Yeah, because I don't think the leagues are asking to start the league up. I think
they're just asking
to practice.
Correct. And then one other thing is, you know, the county fair committee, we're asking about late summer events, and you know they've got a lot of planning they do for the county fair. Would the county allow, you know, us allow them to have the county fair? You know, at this point, having such a big group that's, you know, they're going to be late. I think the third week in August is when they're talking about, and that's a. I mean, that's really far ahead to really kind of determine from a planning standpoint. I can tell you, I think Mr. Spitzer said everyone, with the exception of Rockingham County, has canceled their county fairs for the summer. So. You know,
I think it depends on how late it is, too. The later it is, the better it is for the fair.
What's that, Mr. Weaver?
The later it is, the better it is for the fair itself.
Do we know?
Put the date back maybe another month.
Do we know what the state fair is doing? Because I think one of the big things that they do at the county fair is just to have these kids get their animals certified to go to the state fair.
Kelly, can you unmute Mr. Spitzer?
That's a good question.
Aaron, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, can you answer some of these questions about state fair, county fair?
Sure. So I don't know about the state fair, but our county fair, I've been talking to Ms. Mayo, and she does the 4-H program for the kids and the animals. And if we don't have a county fair, we would maybe let them come out and do their animals for a day to be able to get into the state fair.
So what's...
I think there's a way to
do it. Okay.
She is kind of uncertain because of Virginia Tech's policy is if they're even going to be able to have kids with animals at the fair and people be around them.
Yeah, and the whole fair piece, I mean, with the rides and, you know, I guarantee you not every ride's being sanitized. Well, and I don't know that for sure.
Probably your
like some of our concerns are like sponsors and vendors, like, because we have to let them know now if we're going to have it so we can have people. That's our problem. And then I thought if we wouldn't have a county fair, maybe we could have an event on a Saturday where they could show the animals, and maybe we could have like some other type of event along with the carnival if they're allowed to come and not actually a county fair. That was the thought.
Yeah,
I carnival's kind of like a germ fest.
Yeah, people are gonna have to they're gonna have to take their own risk, but that's how it's gonna be, I think, anywhere you go.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, it's up to the board, but my recommendation would be to hold off on the county fair this year.
If it's only
let's think about 2021.
If it's only one county that's doing
2021.
We don't want to be that county.
Well, and I got a message just now from Mr. Wills, whose daughters show their animals, and it is still on, and we do not have to have a county fair to take your animals to the state fair.
Okay, good.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of risk.
I agree. You know, my only thought would be that, you know, if they want to look into planning, just to be prepared, I can't see us being open that much by
any. So I think I've got some marching orders for some of the parks and rec stuff. If they want to start after July 6th on a very limited basis with their existing staff, with maybe some, you know, like a
talking about his classes.
Yeah, like a six group kayak program or something like that. For
well,
like
you've got three instructors,
temperature testing and waiver forms and all that stuff. Is, you know,
skipping part of it. And then we'll move forward with some of the about the practices for the programs. For the board, one thing I just want to keep in mind, so Fred, then, since we're operating maybe under this new virtual guidance from the General Assembly, do I not need to do then a public hearing for a continuity of operations ordinance again? If the board wants to continue to meet past August virtually.
No, it's only one meeting.
Well, because if so, we're getting short on meetings.
Yep. First of all, it's going to depend on what the governor does, because the application of that statute is dependent on the governor's declaration. And secondly, the ordinance we have on virtual meetings that you were just advertising to readopt is only good for a maximum of 6 months.
Yep.
So we will have used 2 months by the time you're re-advertising it.
Well, no, we've used it for, well, by the end of of July, we will have 4 months in.
Right.
Yeah.
So then you're inherently limited to a maximum of 6 months.
Yeah. So my question is, do I need to start preparing an authorization for advertisement of a public hearing for the July 1 meeting?
Probably not a bad idea.
Okay. I mean, yes. Okay. I would say, because if we're still at risk, then
that's fine. I just want to make sure that we're
normally. I would say I would let it go until July, but we don't have a second July meeting.
That's fine. We'll get that going then too.
I would add one other thing to the any of the groups that get together, that along with the consent form, that there's a consent to allow contact tracing, because there's some debate going on about whether or not people will participate in contact tracing. I think we should, if they want to participate in an event that we're sponsoring, agree to participate in contact tracing. So
can I make a comment?
Yeah, go on, Mr. Spitzer.
All right, so our summer camp program, we were thinking about doing totally outdoors and not transporting anybody anywhere. So we'd use like the pole barn and we'd do crafts and then we'd take hikes and it'd be like half day programs. That way we could clean for the next day.
No, I think that's all great, but we want to, you know, I think from the county's perspective, record who's participating and also ensure that, you know, they agree to contact tracing so that if somebody does get infected, we can get that out as quickly as possible, right?
I agree to have their temperatures taken every morning.
Yeah, every time. I mean, that's just, there's no reason to have one kid in there that's got a temperature. It's just not worth it.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to try to do whatever we can to keep everybody safe. That's why we want to try to do things outdoors where we can spread them out.
And we have lots of space outdoors, too.
Yes,
we do. Pleasant Grove.
Yes, we do. They can all wear the little hats.
The little noodle hats.
But you know children. You know kids. You try to spread them out, but you have to be real conscientious. Because they're going to get together. I really like to take the temperature thing.
So that's all I really had on this piece until we get...
I mean, I think we crossed over quite a bit.
It did. It'll cross over a little bit more, but.
No. All right. Thank you, sir. Now we'll go forward with consent agenda. H, minutes of May 20th, 2020, Ms. Solis. I, PSAP Vesta call system for 911, Ms. Toller. J, Commonwealth Attorney's Office paralegal salary, Ms. Rice. K, FY20 Sheriff Department Insurance Claim 2016 for Taurus VIN number 8356, Ms. McGyver. And L, FY21 CSA Provider Agreement, Mr. Moeller. Anything we need to pull?
No, I was just wondering about I and how much that will affect the budget. Probably $9,639. That's with the telephone county.
So they're not asking for any funding for this. This is already funded in the emergency communications budget.
But it changed prior to the final contract.
What changed?
There are changes to the contract, is my understanding.
The what?
Is that a Cindy thing?
Yes.
Cindy's on the line.
I'm on here.
Okay, Cindy.
We actually approved this contract last month. There was just a change in the actual contract document to be read that had to come back forward to you guys. But none of the financial documents changed at all. All the finances are exactly what they were last month when you guys looked at it. Excuse me.
Very good.
Well, thank you.
And that is no change to our budget whatsoever.
Like it says overage $9,039.
Yes, sir.
Right, and they are covering that in their budget as is. There will be a change to the budget going forward in 2021, but you already accounted for it in 2022. You already accounted for it in 2021, and it's being in 2020. He's already got the funds for it paid out of other savings that he has.
All righty, anything else need to be pulled?
You ready for a motion?
Getting ready to ask, yes, sir.
I move to approve of the consent agenda H through L.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion's made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Now we'll move forward with unfinished business. Local allocations for federal CARES coronavirus relief funds.
So this is kind of the same presentation. I'm not going to go through all this again. But anyway, you can use it for COVID-related expenses. As Ms. Swissdale said before, we did get an allocation. $2.3 million funds were received on June 1st. And kind of depending upon how we look at some of the use of funds, after kind of talking with Ms. Lenher, these funds can be invested in an interest-bearing account. So in order to kind of segregate that and not kind of keep it in the general fund or the VIP fund, where it's going to be a little more difficult to break out what interest was earned, one thing we were kind of thinking of doing is possibly taking some of that funding and maybe investing it for like a 90-day period. So let's hypothetically say right now we got $2.3 million, and we think off the bat we're going to use $300,000 of that money. Let's put $2 million of it in a 90-day CD. Once the 90-day CD comes up, we can determine how much of that we want to use then, and say, it's another $300,000. Well, then we want to put another $1.7 million in the 90-day CD. And then
that all goes back to the federal government anyway.
No,
at
no,
the end, if we don't use it.
If we don't use it.
Yeah, and the interest does too, doesn't it?
Correct.
So there's not much debate about that, really. I mean,
well, the debate is we can utilize, if we are smart with earning more interest, we can utilize it for county projects.
Yeah, if you spend the whole amount.
Yes.
Can we spend $2,400,000 on this particular project.
On anything related to COVID?
Yeah.
Yes.
We can spend that much.
Yes, we could.
Okay.
And it's up to the board for how they want to spend it.
One of the things that I brought up, I said something to, I think I said it to you, Mr. Dahl, I'm not sure. But we ran a call the other night and just came back to the firehouse, and there are personal PPEs that are battery operated that I forget how much they cost. I told the guys to get it together, so I'm sure that they'll get it together and come back. But I think it's about $1,000 each unit that it fits just like a regular mask would of the SCBAs, but it makes its own oxygen. And it's battery operated.
Good.
Why don't we get it to pay for the compressor and make them wear their SCBAs?
Because you don't want to wear SCBAs. You don't want to wear the air packs and everything else into all that. No. I can't explain to you exactly why, but I can tell you that.
That's good innovation. Yeah.
So I'm not going to go through all 1 through 6 again. It can cover some medical expense related items, public health expense related items, payroll expense related items, expenses to facilitate health measures, economic support, and other things. And the finance department and we are getting constant guidance, and it's changing on what it can and cannot be used for. And so as time goes on, you know, we're not going to have this all figured out today, and it's going to be a kind of an every other board meeting discussion. We kind of talk about this, but so some things for funding uses. The first item is business grants, and is Brian on there?
Yeah.
So I know some localities. Have generally taken about 15% of the money that they get and apply it towards business grants. Brian, you want to talk about business grants for a little bit?
Yeah. Today, me and the new intern did some research on counties that have already announced their programs. A lot of counties are discussing it, but they haven't announced it yet. Chesterfield did their back in business grant. They used $5 million, which is 16%. Theirs were for $10,000 per business. Town of Culpeper is using nearly their whole allocation. Of course, a town has a lot less administration than a county does, so they're using their whole allocation, almost 87% of it. And they're doing grants of 20, 30, or 40,000 based off of employment. We also have seen Fairfax County, they were the first one to get the funding, because they got it straight from the federal government. They did 12.5% of their for grants, again, 10, 15, or 20,000 per business based off of full-time employment. And then also Loudoun and Prince William. Loudoun is gonna do 15% and Prince William's gonna do 12%.
Are these grants or loans that we would do?
They're grants.
They have to be grants.
They have to be grants.
Yeah,
okay. You cannot, they have to be grants, and you also cannot ask for clawbacks, because again, if you ask for a clawback and you claw back in January, you've now violated the CARES Act.
Yeah. So if the board wanted to do business grants, quite frankly, without getting too creative at this point for a lot of the other items, I'm not sure how we'd be able to utilize the whole $2.3 million unless you did some type of business grants.
I don't see how you spend it all anyway.
Hypothetically, when you're talking about business grants, yep. I'll just use me.
Sure.
I've had to buy PPE. I've had to buy, I'm not spending a fortune in PPE, but I've got to buy thermometers. I've got to do all that different stuff. Would that be something type of thing that you're talking about?
Yeah.
So restaurants that buy PPE, best restaurants that have to buy?
Brian?
So they would have to show that they have a loss based off of COVID. It could be they have increased expenses or they have a loss of revenue. So therefore, and their expenses stay the same. All of the applications are very similar to a loan application where, you know, they need to show their financials based off of 2019 to 2020. But yes, that would I think that would definitely qualify.
A restaurant would have a laws.
What about Park Union Village Restaurant? I don't know if Keith has decided to just get out of the restaurant business, or would he reopen if he had the finances?
Well, the business grants, you know, when you look at these and you're talking 10, 20, 30, 40,000, that's going to have a significant impact on businesses. I don't know about this specifically about the Fort Union Village restaurant, but I do know that many businesses, especially if you have employees, are have increased costs or they've been closed. Some of our restaurants might not be able to show a loss. There's a very well working theory that some of our businesses have been busier than usual because of the stay at home order and more people being in the county. But for a lot of businesses that had to stop, had to telework, businesses that are home based bound or interact, you know, contractors that interact with the public that might have had lost revenue, there's going to be a lot more people will be eligible. And with the business loan, we targeted doing that loan for storefronts. This gives us an opportunity to open up
and
really make significant impact.
So we're basically asking us if we would be interested in looking at doing grants as part with part of our money.
Is the board interested in us bringing forward something?
Absolutely. 15%.
I can't see why not. I mean, we're just trying to
target 15%, and then if we need to allocate more, we can.
Yeah.
I think 15% is $345,000. I think is what we came up with. Right, okay. Brian?
Yeah, it was like $350,000.
Yeah, we can increase it.
Which obviously would have a significant impact.
Ms. Booker?
I would like for you to take a look at NACA, the food pantry and the food, whether they had enough space during this time. Plus, they've had to close the main part of NACA, and that's the part that helps people with electric bills, mortgage, and things. They need to restructure that building so that it's not so close. I don't know whether that's something that this money could be a part of or not, but there is a need.
I think the county could help towards some food-related distribution and maybe towards food, but they're not going to be able to help necessarily with retooling and rebuilding kind of the MACA operation per se. But there may be a way to provide some funding for what they're doing.
Do you think Meals on Wheels could benefit?
I mean, there's got to be documentation of their increase, and you know, there's all kinds of paperwork.
Yeah.
But anything like that is doable.
Yeah.
Under this, I mean, depending on what you
want. Well, going back,
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Some of these business grants that other counties have set up have gone not included nonprofits. Some have included nonprofits.
Okay.
We definitely could structure these grants to include a percentage for nonprofits and a percentage for businesses, for profit businesses.
Brian, you'd mentioned the loan program. Can you just give a quick update on that? Do you have any feedback on where that is right now?
Yes, we had 5 businesses complete applications. We still have available funding for additional 5 businesses. And we had a few more inquiries after the deadline closed. CIC has offered to extend that and move to a rolling application as a first come, first serve. If the board's okay with it, I would just move into that. We got an additional $15,000 donation for our businesses.
So what we'll do, we'll come back with some ideas, and maybe we'll, I'll have Mr. Rothmel pull from, instead of reinventing the wheel, pull some requirements from what others are doing for what the, what the requirements are for the business.
But absolutely, that's something that we would want to do.
Yeah.
Look into.
Okay.
I was going to say, yes, ma'am?
And I know you probably thought of this, and I don't know if this got, but we need, but I think that we would need a lot of creative postage and signage, not only just with words, but with pictures as well, like wearing masks or distances, something that, that people will notice.
Yep, Ms. Booker.
Especially if you were going to do anything with children.
Yep, we're actually coming up to that. We've got some items where we got some information on that as well. It's kind of down the list a little bit here, and it's not of less of importance because it's down the list.
All right, let's go down the list.
Let me go down the list really quick here, and then like I said, this is not an all inclusive list. This is not final. Obviously, some items are PPE supplies. We've purchased supplies already. You know, we had to purchase some plexiglass barriers for the June primaries for all the different primary voting precincts. The electoral board just felt it would be safer for the people, and they were getting less volunteers. So we've got some plexiglass barriers. There's also, going into the courtroom, we ordered a temperature kiosk because once court opens back up, it's one of these self...
You
basically walk up to it and it tells you what your temperature is if you got a high temperature. And then obviously it's the mask. You know, we've got, you know, disposable masks that we're going to be providing for staff, and you know, we're going to need to provide it also for probably citizens that are going into whether the courthouse or other areas. So one, we've got current expenses already, and then you know, we probably want to get a reserve too, some type of backup on this equipment. So $30,000 is just nominally the initial amount that we need, that we probably, you know, as just kind of a quick off the cuff type of number, but you know, we're gonna need to, you know, allocate money for that. Sanitary supplies, you know, we're going through tons of hand sanitizer. Now that we've got a lot of these automated hand sanitizing machines, we're gonna, you know, go through more hand sanitizer. We're gonna kind of have these at in the entrance of each building, so when individuals come in, it's available. Obviously, cleaning supplies, cleaning equipment. You know, the schools, you know, they were nice enough to let us use some of their equipment, but they've got these things, these Clorox 360 fogging machines, and it's basically a big fogger where you bring it into this room and it sprays like a mist or a fogging mist into the room, and it disinfects the whole room. You know, we're going to go through and purchase one of those so we can keep up a better cleaning regimen here throughout all county buildings. And those in the schools have been using that for a while, and it worked out well for them. You know, unemployment insurance costs. We are seeing costs to the county for unemployment insurance. So we're going to come back to the board and say, look, we kind of, what my game plan is, for the next meeting, we want to come back with more like rock solid numbers of saying, look, from this initial $2.3 million, we want to take this and put a budget for this particular line item, put, you know, a certain budget for sanitary supplies, a certain budget for unemployment insurance costs, for salaries. You know, the sheriff's office, if they're working overtime because they're helping to do traffic control at a COVID drive-through testing event, things like that qualify. If we have a sheriff's deputy sitting or standing outside of the treasurer's office to maintain social distancing and stuff like that, things like that would apply. We've got individuals that are out on FMLA for certain reasons that may be COVID related, or there's childcare issues. Funding for that would apply. And then also, as Sheriff Hess and some others talked about hazard pay. Does the board want to do anything for hazard pay? And, you know, what does that look like? I know Sheriff Hess talked about the custodial staff, and he talked about his sheriff's deputies. Who would who would qualify for that. Some construction costs. You know, it was mentioned that over in the clerk of the circuit court, prior to us getting this funding, she wanted to use and save her existing budget to put the big glass front in front of all of her, in front of all of her individuals. Well, now that we've got this funding, that type of funding can be utilized to put up the glass barrier. We're going to do the same thing in the commissioner's office. He's got a, you know, just an open window in his area, put up a glass barrier there as well, so when citizens come in, there's a glass barrier. You know, put some added protection in some of the parks and rec areas, like some, maybe some half doors with little counters so people can't come right up to the individual's desk at Parks and Rec. And also down in planning and building, you know, like the commissioner's office has and others, not only are those individuals down there kind of the front line for planning and building, they get lots of people coming in all the time. There's direct contact, they're open. We wanna create kind of a facade that maybe the commissioner of revenue's office has, where there's maybe some type of barrier with a glass partition there too for those spaces down there. Not only does that provide some protection from just a staff and citizen standpoint, but there's also, if you think about those areas, they deal with cash handling as well. So that'll also provide some protection down there from those. So we want to come forward with, you know, allowing just a little bit for doing some construction, you know, tweaks around the county, long-term permanent construction fixes. The public health piece, as Mr. O'Brien and Mrs. Booker just spoke about, I know last week Mr. O'Brien was asking about doing yard signs, you know, for the community, what that would cost, you know, about wear face masks. Ms. Harris got some information from a local business about doing, I think it was 2,000 signs.
1,000
signs.
A couple of big ones, cut in the corner spots would be good too.
Yeah, yeah, you know, you could do some bigger ones, but anyway, to do 1,000 signs, it's $3.75 a sign, so, you know, roughly $4,000 for yard signs. If the board wants to do a full page ad in the Flu Banner Review, that would be $380. So just as an anomaly, I put in $5,000 for public health communication.
Yeah. Advertising on a lot of the radios will probably do it just as public health announcements, but
yep.
If they're not, just on TV, you know, be doing an ad on TV, so that cares.
Yep, and then also...
So, and we can increase that amount, obviously.
Yeah, oh yeah, and like I said, this is just an initial amount. So I'm just putting some off-the-cuff, you know, getting some information from folks, and then... Because of we've gone to somewhat of a teleworking approach, we've had to buy some equipment. We've had to buy some phone equipment. We've had to buy some different meeting equipment. We've had to purchase the clerk of the court's office purchased some different camera equipment. So again, here, you know, so looking at $35,000. So these are just kind of a rough overview of what we're talking about, but. So at the next meeting, we'd like to come back to the board with saying, okay, well, here's the $2.3 million, and now we want to allocate certain amounts to these categories to do this stuff. I would like to get a head nod from the board on the construction costs, especially because before we open up to the public at some point, we would like to start with some of these renovations to make some protective areas like down in planning and building, you know, finishing off the commissioner's window and things like that. So that's all that I really had for the board as far as, you know, funding uses. And then obviously if the board has any further ideas that they want staff to look into.
Well, this initial thing that you have here is probably under $250,000.
Yeah, I think my stuff was right around, prior to the business grants, I think it was right around 200,000
yeah,
or something
so
like
that.
That
and you're still at $500,000 where we're only, you know, allocating 1/6 of the total amount.
We're just getting started, aren't we?
Right.
Well,
right. I think construction, I mean, yes, it's salaries, construction costs, and communicating with yard signs and doing that, we should have that out as quickly as possible because it's if we're opening up, we're opening up and we want people to play by the rules as far as that goes.
Yeah, so off this list right here, if the board Maybe if I just get head nods to move forward with some of these things, we can come back and come forward with a budget for the next one. I mean, if the board wants to move forward with communications for signage and yard signs or full page ad, we can do that. There's some areas we just have hard costs already that we've had to spend.
With the construction stuff, that's no brainer.
Okay.
And save a life with a mask. Get those out there. Get some big ones out there too.
I do want you to look at that the building where MACA is, that's our building. They need also plexiglass with people walking up. They also need a place, like the treasurer's office has, for people are going to be doing applications now and dropping those applications in some kind of a box. I don't know whether that's our responsibility or not, but I do think the protecting the volunteers who are behind the counter dealing with the public, you just need to find out if that's something that we should be doing, or is that something that MACA should be doing out of Charlottesville?
Yeah, we're going to have to read the,
because they're dealing with our people.
Yeah, we're going to have to get a little more guidance on that, Mrs. Booker, because like I said, MACA is not a county department. Although they're providing a service to county residents, so we have to see how we can maybe use some funding, whether we're using funding towards maybe something that they're already providing their own funding for to offset it.
Yeah, one thing that we talked about briefly as well too was maybe the potential of getting a nurse and or having somebody who can perform tests on a regular basis, and just encourage people who are feeling sick, because that's the other thing, is a lot of people who don't have health insurance aren't going to go somewhere. So whether we have like almost a free clinic for this period of time, and I think the money allows for it, that would be a good thing to look at.
Yeah, So going back to the nurse and stuff like that, I think now we're doing some of this. VDH is doing some testing in the county. I don't know this for sure, but I don't know if there's a way for the county to put their money into the VDH to do more testing in the county. I think that would possibly qualify if the board wanted to go that route.
Yeah, or it's possible, like, Charlottesville has the free clinic. We might be able to reach out to a group like that and have them expand out to other areas if they know that we're interested in doing that. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Are you considering a health department for Savannah, where we would have a nurse here? Because we could only be funded for that through
the Yes.
And then after that, it's our responsibility if we keep it.
I'm not suggesting it goes beyond that, Mrs. Eager. I'm just saying that we want people to feel comfortable about, getting tested and or having their health checked if necessary.
Miss Booker might be able to answer this one. But isn't that what the health center is for in Buckingham, Miss Booker? Can't folks go over there?
Well, yeah, but a lot of Fluvanians don't go over to CDC like they used to.
We need to promote that more.
That might be what some of the signs are for.
Because that would be something that, if you need to be seen.
Yeah.
Go to the Central Virginia Health Clinic.
We don't have but two doctors. People don't have primary doctors. That's only Bishop and Lamford that I know of. We really do need a nurse, even after this virus is gone.
All right. Well, and I brought up something the last time. This goes back to you talked about the pay. We know that we changed our budget because of COVID. We had our budget set up. We were going to do a 2% and a 3% raise. And I don't know if that's something this could go towards.
That's really looking at
I don't know if it is, but that's something that we definitely changed because of.
There are some additional bills coming out right now. One's called the HEROES Act, and what's the other one?
Well, my question then also would be, you know, and I, don't get me wrong, I think we should do this, because one of them looked at me one time and goes, you know, we're going to work every day and we don't get anything extra. And unfortunately, there are a lot of people who are unemployed. Well, the people who are unemployed got $600 extra per week. You know, and that's what one of the guys, and I can't remember who it was, said to me. But the fire departments and the rescue squads that are volunteers, I don't know if there's anything we can do in that direction, but every one of them has, there hadn't been a call not answered because people were afraid. Now, they may have told us not to go until others got there, but I mean, I'm just...
Yeah, I don't know if that falls into hazard pay versus...
They're not. It would have to fall under something else.
Like I said, I'm not trying to open up another can of worms, but that group has still been answering the call.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah, they're not employees, so we can't pay them hazard pay. Now, I'm not saying there's not something. I don't know. We'll have to look into it.
Yeah,
I mean, we can't call it that.
I
say be able to, you know, pay for an EMT class or something like that. I mean, some of those things, we might be able to do some of that.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, we just have to make sure that whatever we are utilizing the funds for, that it is tied to COVID and the pandemic some way, somehow.
Yeah. And recruitment ads for, you know, emergency personnel and rescue personnel, that's probably valid too, because it's a health cost.
I mean, like I said, I would want to make 100% sure that what we are doing somewhat falls in the guidelines, because when we get to the gray area...
Yeah, absolutely.
But coming up with an advertisement thing or things to say, hey, don't forget the health department or the Central Virginia, I can't remember it.
Well, do we have that?
I'm sorry, tell
us. It's the Central Virginia.
That absolutely is something I think that would be, do the man stuff, but I think that would be as valuable to anyone, because those folks that are sitting there going, I can't get health service, hey, drive 15 minutes south or 20 minutes south and you can get it.
Well, and Gushen cares for the folks on
the Yeah.
Right. That's the other one. Any of those things like that, we absolutely need to make sure we're getting that news out there.
So you want us to...
Mike, I've got a question about the schools. We get in contact with them about what things they may need to start school, like masks for teachers and children, or what they think, or when they can start, and how we can help them do that.
So for the schools, they give their own back.
They got some care money, too.
Yes, they do.
They got care money, too. I don't know how much.
I wonder if you could buy buses based on the premise of, you know, creating space. You know, you can't have but so many people on the bus, so you need additional buses.
That's a stretch.
You know, I'm stretching, but you know,
380. Yeah. How can we spend between $2 and $3 million?
11 people on a bus.
Who's got to figure that out?
Yeah. Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
We know we're going to come back to this every other meeting, so there's no need to spend an hour and a half on this.
No, so what I'll do, I'm going to bring a budget for it at the next meeting for some of this stuff.
Just wear a mask, save lives, get those out.
Hey, the one thing I would add to that is, I talked to the guys, we're talking about the PPE.
Yep.
Pick a month, whatever that month is, and keep that many months on supply, so that if something happens, we have it here. And then, if we're doing it really well, we can rotate it so that we know what's the oldest to the newest. So the oldest is always what we pull out to go use, and we replace it.
Yeah, and kind of what we were talking about regarding having a kind of a reserve of PPE and masks. Mm-hmm. You know, once the courts open, so the Supreme Court just ordered another judicial emergency order. So the courts weren't open up June 7th. Well, they extended that. Well, they're currently open, but to handle matters, they extended it to June 28th. Ms. Treadway sent that to me today. So once you know, once you have some of these places that are open up more for, like, you know, people paying taxes, people going to court, and if they don't have masks, we got to provide masks. I think we'll get a really good idea at that point what our burn rate on masks are going to be once we're having to provide it for people that are out there, staff that's on board, citizens that are coming to county buildings. We'll know what we need, but we do need to purchase more masks.
Absolutely, but that was just a thought we had sitting around coming. Like I said, we came back and we're just talking about it. If we could, as a county, if we found out what we need, try to keep a supply of 6 months.
Okay.
And always rotate it through so that we're not just having it sent to the individual places. They can come grab what they need for the month, and then we replace that over here. Okay. So we always keep it rotating so we don't end up with 10-year-old mask that we got to say, okay, hook, throw out.
So you want to save a life, wear a mask, or wear a mask?
Yeah, save lives, wear a mask.
Well, but I'm telling you guys, we got to come up with something where we're promoting the Goochland Cares and the that needs to be a lot of them on time.
So, this is one that Trisha Johnson and
Lynn Stan.
Yes, Lynn Stan Hero came up with. That's one. They came up with a whole bunch.
What do you mean came up with it?
They created it.
They made it. Okay.
Yeah, I reached out to them last week or the week before. I don't even remember. Stop the spread. Mask on in public. Protect each other. They've been busy. Glucose care.
Love that one.
Mask.
I'm all about that one.
I like that one too. The only concern that we had about this one is the map doesn't look like a mask so much, so they may have to retweak that. But the rest of it, we like.
The rest of it's great.
Yeah.
So if the board's interested, we can go ahead and find
like
one of those
like
and
that
forward
one.
With it.
That one I do.
Hold on, go back to the other one. That's a great one to send to Albemarle. Just let them be a patriot, wear a mask. We're not
like
the patriots, we're the blue guys.
I personally don't like that one. But anyway, the only other consideration was those prices for signs were for two color. So we may have to tweak how we do the...
I think
we got the money.
Okay.
Well,
we got it.
Well, like I said, but I would come up with something definitely, and I'd make a good percentage of them to put out about the health center and about the Goochland Cares. That these are places, if you don't have insurance, if you don't have the ability to go to a doctor's office, you can go here and they're going to take care of you.
Yep.
And we definitely want one some of the big boards. You know,
okay.
You've got to
put it on county property.
You can put it on county property. I know that we can probably put it right there at the corner of Lake Monticello Road and South Boston. That is owned by Tom Marachi. He'll let us do that right there. So that's a great place to put one. I also know that they put one next to what's a hardware store? Ace Hardware would probably put one there.
Yeah,
so there's a lot of places
up front.
You can put one. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, I'd also make sure we get them around to all the areas of the county.
Absolutely.
Because they're going to be lower income areas of the county that will need that.
Yep. So maybe we'll order a bunch of the small ones, over 1,000, and maybe we'll order maybe five or ten of the big ones, and you know, a couple going in each district or something like
that. Exactly.
Okay.
I like both the ones that have the Fluco flag on.
May I add something about the mask?
Yes, ma'am.
May I add about the mask?
Yes, ma'am.
I know you're aware of all the groups. Okay. I know you're aware of all the groups who are making masks. Last Saturday, the National Coalition of 100 Black Women passed out 300 of them at the dollar store. And you know that Ryan Washington probably had like a couple. They've given at least 100 to all of the churches around, most of them around in this area. I just had about 100 of them delivered to me a little while ago. So we are trying our best to get them out to people down the road, to grandma and people like that. So the more masks we can get, the better, because most people will take one or two because you have to wash the, these are the cloth ones. You have to wash them, so you need another one to use while you're getting that one ready. So, you know, people in Fluvanna has stepped up to the plate with making masks. We've given out, I know, over close to 2,000 masks up to this point. So it's a good thing. So the more we can get more, the better.
I was standing in EW's the other day and got a phone call from a lady asking me, where can I take masks to that I just want to give away? And I said, guess what? EW's hands them to each customer when they walk in here. And she brought a whole, I don't know how many, but she brought a bunch of them just to EW's to pass out. And like you said, ma'am, the ladies at Fort Union Baptist were doing the same thing. They're not asking for anything in return. They're just trying to help each other. And that's what we all need to be doing.
Yeah. Right.
Anyone else got anything to add?
The one thing to speak to Mrs. Booker, to speak to Mrs. Booker's thing about masks. So we're apparently getting 1,000 cloth masks coming from the state that we can, you know, we can distribute out to folks to distribute to the community as well.
I think she hit a nail on the head. If you distribute 50 to each church, and they will get them to the elderly that need them.
Yeah.
And the only other thing I'd add on the signage is you don't have to just pick one. You can have several different ones out there.
Different signs, yeah.
Right, different signs. I mean, it's I really do think that those big ones with the health center and with Goochland Cares, I'm glad you brought that back up, because that's one that we hadn't brought up very much. But people need to be aware that these places are there to help if you are in a time of need, and that's all we've talked about being in.
Yes, and the health center over in New Cagney, they have a good system too of how they accept their patients. We need to know what that system is so that we can get the information out to the public on fan mail or what have you.
I think fan mail, but people aren't going to do that. I think that the signs are something that we definitely need to make some of the signs that. To get them up and say, hey, this is available. Or if you have questions, call us and we can direct you.
That's all I have.
Oh, all righty. So, any other unfinished business? Is there any new business?
Yes, I'd like to follow up with Mr. Garcia's recommendations and also some of the recommendations that were made by Ms. Lisha? I thought some, and I want to commend the sheriff for stepping out right up at the very beginning with, you know, kind of saying this isn't okay and this isn't what we want to do. But I'd love to have him give us an update at some point in time as to what efforts he's taking to ensure that, you know, there is no bias or discrimination in the sheriff's department and what procedures that they have. We've had a number of different times where, you know, we've had incidents or the potential of incidents that were related to racism in our own county here. I think trying to keep that at bay and trying to make sure that we were communicating as a government body that we don't think that's okay in any way, shape, or form is really important. I love the idea that Ms. Lachey put out there of creating a group of African Americans that were interested in seeing how they can promote their message among the community and among the government and its function and the roles, and getting that dialogue started. I think one of the things that we're seeing right now is a lot of distrust of government. And I'm not saying that people distrust Fluvanna government, but, you know, on the other hand, there's been a lot of bashing of government for a lot of years, and when you bash the government, it's really easy for people to get angry at it and upset. And so to the degree that we take and make efforts and show that we're here to listen and that we don't tolerate that kind of behavior and or racism, and we communicate the efforts and the steps that we're making to ensure that that doesn't happen, I think that serves in our interest. So
I'm definitely all in favor of a declaration, but much more than a declaration, a process that's put in place to, you know, improve relations. And I think Flavanna has very good and a long history of very good race relations, but there's no reason not to make sure that we're re-engaging, especially at this point in time. And especially when it seems like no matter what you say, ultimately we see these same things happening over and over and over again. And again, if we don't communicate it, people don't trust us. So I'd like to see some efforts made on that part from the county.
If the board wants, the sheriff is on the line. If you want the sheriff to speak on anything right now, he's
sure. Love to have the same.
Sheriff?
Sheriff Hess.
Yes.
I have something.
Go ahead.
I don't know, Sheriff, are you aware that there is a movement to have something about Flavanna Together, a virtual call in, a panel from different areas of the county to talk about and support that Black Lives Matter? There's something that's going on afoot. Hayden Parrish and the NAACP president, Ben Hudson. And I know you're part of that, Sheriff. And some other people in Hayslip. I don't know if it's off the ground yet. So we are doing something to bring Flavanna together and be able to share information and talk about equality for everybody. So that's the only thing that I can add. Hopefully it will happen, and soon. I don't know whether this board could do a resolution or where we stand on all of this, some kind of a statement to present to the public.
Sheriff Hess?
Let me answer Ms. Booker first. Yes, ma'am, I received a message shortly from Mr. Parrish about an event on Sunday at 4 o'clock. I haven't been able to respond to him, but I will be participating in that.
Okay, great. And I think Mr. Hayslip will be.
I haven't been able to read it, ma'am, and I don't know who else might be invited to that. But like I said, when I'm done, I will respond and let them know I'll be available at 4 on Sunday.
Great.
What's going to happen?
So it is in the works. I guess they're going to send out a telephone number and you could call in and listen to the panel. I don't know all the details.
I imagine it will be just like we are on our meetings, ma'am. It'll go through a network and have a phone number that you can call to be a part of. Ms. Eager, did you have something you wanted to add?
Right. I just wanted to know what was planned, what they were going to do in the midst of Sunday at 4 o'clock teleconference.
It says, I see the word Zoom on there. I don't have my glasses.
So, Sheriff.
Let me see if I have email.
It's going to be on Zoom format. I do see that.
So, Sheriff, mm-hmm.
Sheriff's office received a similar letter from similar to what you all received, and we responded to that individual, and we look forward to meeting with them and going over any issues or thoughts they may have. And we're totally transparent. Our policies, the way we do our training, we're willing to share with the community anything that we do, because there's nothing we do that's a secret other than the criminal history. So back to what Tony was saying earlier, we're more than willing to help in any way. Even, you know, like with Linda, we've helped Linda every year with her, when she has her tough days at the end there, when everybody tries to come in, we'll provide whatever protection services that she needs to make sure that she can run her office safely. I don't know if she's on here or not. But the sheriff's office is here to serve the community, and that's what we've done, and that's what we're going to continue doing.
Right. Well, and one idea, Sheriff, is, you know, to follow up and put your statement in the paper. I think that was a great statement that you made, but also maybe
have an
advertisement that lists the policies and procedures and how you approach it, and you know, whatever you feel is relevant. I think that's important to communicate as well too, and you know, that can be in essence, you know, also.
Oh, absolutely! I look forward to Sunday and listening to what people's concerns are. And the Board of Supervisors provided us with the greatest instrument to serve the people in the community, and that's the body cams and the car cameras. Everything we do is documented.
Yeah, it is, but unfortunately, we still see a lot of incidents. Okay. So,
and that is documentation to it.
That's right. That helps exactly. But I mean, you know, if the policy is we fire people automatically. For those kinds of incidents, or I mean, I think the more that people know, here's how we would react.
Oh,
the better.
Absolutely. I think I had that conversation with y'all not long ago that somebody had to leave, and I can't say everything, but I can be as transparent.
We don't need you getting in trouble.
Yeah.
Thank you for all you do. I will say this. I'll finish up, ma'am.
Okay. I have the email. The title is going to be Fluvanna Together, Striving for Equality. Now, what he's doing is contacting the panel first. Once he gets a commitment from the panel members, then he will advertise this for Sunday at 4. There will be no questions asked of the panelists. So you just give your thoughts about striving, how we all can strive for equality. So look out for the advertisement when he gets it set up.
And, you know, Mr. Dahl, do you have any thoughts or ideas on how, you know, how maybe that suggestion that was made by Ms. Lachey there in terms of creating a board might help the county?
I haven't had a whole lot of chance to think about what Ms. LaShawn's email was since the meeting, since I just got it before, but we'll certainly look into it and see what we can do and see if there's a way and bring some recommendations back to the board. We could certainly create a board or a committee like that. So like I said, we can bring something back to the board.
Yeah. All righty. Okay, let's see. So is there any other unfinished business, or I mean new business? Hearing none, I will now open the second round of public comments. Anyone wishing to address the board, please keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board, and state your name and address. Is there anyone wishing to speak to the board at this time? We have one, I believe, for public comment.
Hello again, this is Rudy Garcia, still at 802 Ravana Woods Drive, Fort Union, Virginia. Only this time my comments are from my position as a community volunteer and president of the Chamber of Commerce. First off, I really enjoyed the discussion on when to open up the county. And I would just point out that the Kids College from PVCC has gone 100% to a digital platform. That includes all of the arts and crafts stuff that they normally do, plus robotics and everything else. Parks and Rec may want to take a look at their program and figure out a way to duplicate that rather than bringing the kids into danger. The other thing that I'd like to bring up is that I'm not sure how many of you know, but there is a lot of community activity going on in support of our friends, families, and neighbors. The Rotary Club has been very active over the last 6 or 7 weeks. We made a donation to MACA of equipment totaling over $6,000. We made a donation to the county for almost $2,000 worth of face masks and PPE in the way of hand sanitizer. And between our two food-raising drive-by fundraisers, we donated over 6,000 pounds of food to MACA and about 600 pounds worth of personal supplies to Meals on Wheels. I would like to ask you all to consider maybe bringing in your nonprofits that are dealing with this for an open discussion at one of your board meetings, actually having them on the agenda and letting them sign up for a time to talk about how this has affected them. And then I'd just like to move straight into the CARES Act. If you were to apply 20% of the CARES Act to business grants, you would have almost $70,000 available. And if you put a limit on $10,000 grants, you'd be able to affect the lives of 10 different business owners. $10,000 goes a long way. $10,000 would probably make up for the lost rent that Solange DeShano lost while she was closed due to the governor's stay-at-home order and shutdown. $10,000 might have kept one or two of our businesses in business. It may, in fact, have helped the Fork Union Village restaurant to ride this out and stay in business. So I would just really ask you to consider strongly allocating as much as you can of that $2.7 million to supporting the businesses in Flavanna County. Because only by supporting the businesses in Flavanna County can you be assured that they're going to remain and generate revenue for the county in the future. As Brian Rothmel kind of intimated, some of our grocer retailers are having record years right now. And that is because so many of our fellow citizens are at home and they're understanding that they can shop here in Flavanna County. I understand that the CARES Act will not allow us to build an online e-commerce platform, but maybe there's a way to offset some of the costs to assist in building that platform. We've been working on that very hard. Then finally, I'd just like to say that investing the money in a 90-day investment instrument makes a lot of sense to me. And since we have two of the three members of the finance board here, I would make a motion that we approve that there, Mr. Chairperson.
Can't do that at this time.
I know that, but it was still a thought, Michael. but anyway,
before you go on, Mr. Garcia, let me just say for the record that that was your comment that you were saying rhetorically. It was not intended to be an actual motion.
Absolutely not. You are absolutely correct, Mr. Chair. It was a side comment.
So, thank you, sir.
But it would be nice for the Finance Committee to be able to meet again. We've been kind of out of commission because of this COVID thing. So anyway, my time's almost up. Thank you for your patience. Have a nice evening.
Thank you. It is up. All right, is there anyone else? Seeing no one else, I'll now close the second round of public comment. Mr. O'Brien?
There's a closed session, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, I move to that.
Before you do that, Mr. Chairman, let me say one thing about the closed session. Mr. Dahl brought to my attention a very recent case in the Supreme Court addressing the subject of closed sessions. It was decided last week. It's not anything that I would call groundbreaking or earth-shaking, but I think it gives you some idea of what the Supreme Court is thinking. It's involved a case from Smith County. There is a place in Virginia called Smith County. About a closed session that was held to discuss actual or probable litigation. The Supreme Court found that the closed session was held improperly because of the information that was used to go into the meeting, and also because they discussed in this session things beyond the scope of the motion.
Yeah, we know that.
So that if in this case, what it was there was a library board, the members of which were terminated by the Board of Supervisors, and a couple of them sued the county over that termination. So there was litigation pending. The Board of Supervisors then went on this closed session. Subsequently, they came out and held a special meeting for the sole purpose of disbanding the library. It was obvious from the record that they had discussed that in that closed session about the litigation. And the Supreme Court said,
I promise you, we're not going to come back, have a special meeting, and disband anything.
Well, but understand what I'm saying.
Yes, sir.
The county argued, number one, that all they had to say was probable or actual litigation, and that the discussion of disbanding the library was related to the litigation. The Supreme Court didn't buy either one of those arguments. So I'm just, when you make the motion, Mr. O'Brien, you need to address the subject matter of the discussion. So the Supreme Court wasn't real specific about what it could have done that would have been right, but I would suggest that if they had said, we have a closed session to discuss actual or potential litigation with the county attorney concerning the termination of certain members of the library board, that would have passed muster. But the Supreme Court made a point of saying, noting that Smith County had a couple other pieces of litigation that were totally unrelated. So just saying litigation was not sufficient. So when you make the motion, just...
They need to amend the motions then. I mean, really, if what you're saying is accurate, I mean, this is boilerplate motion. That's what
yes, you, it would. The boilerplate motion could be dealt with. If I use your sheet here, for example, and these things vary with which one of these things there are, because, for example, if you've got a personnel matter, I don't think the law is that you have to identify what that person is.
Just personnel matter, period.
Well, a personnel matter
regarding inappropriate behavior.
Okay. Application of disciplinary procedure. Acquisition of real estate, that's a real sensitive one because obviously you don't want to go out and say, you know, we're buying Mr. Jones's house because that affects the price. The prospective industry, same thing, you need to be careful about that.
Can't you write down those potential changes for?
We're going to probably have board. You can't. I think you're going to take these on a case by case basis.
Well, no.
Good thing we take our lawyer with us.
Yeah. The legal matters or the litigation, the statute says consultation with legal counsel and briefings by staff members or consultants relating to actual or probable litigation. For example, if you wanted to say. Going back to the OKQ case,
okay,
the litigation relating to the rezoning of the property purchased by OKQ, however you want to identify it.
You document a specific item in that.
It needs to be at least the subject matter.
Closed session.
Yeah, and that's all the guidance the Supreme Court's given you is the subject matter.
Okay, so do I have to annotate anything in particular for this one?
I don't know that there is investment of funds is the subject matter. I think if you noted that it's consideration of investment of public funds where competition or bargaining is involved and disclosure of the subject matter would tend to damage the county's bargaining position.
All of that?
Well, half of it's what's written here.
Uh-huh.
So are you suggesting then the topics that I provide to the board that we need to state what the topics are?
In general terms, and I think we're going to have to feel our way for a while on this. If you get something like litigation, it's easy. Mm-hmm. Because then you would just say, with regard to the rezoning of Blackacre, the disciplining of an employee for violation of the county's
code of conduct.
Code of conduct, yeah, something like that. I think it would not be necessary for you to say to discuss the discharge of Joe Jones for having violated the policy.
Sort of a matter of good judgment as to how you can identify it, but yet not be too specific.
Well, the problem is, closed session, if you need to have a closed session, it's because it needs to be confidential.
Yes, and sure.
If you come up with very close identification.
That's the only way we come up with it.
Right. Now, I think in the Supreme Court's case, the decision was made easier by the fact that it would have been easy for them to discuss. Everybody knew that was a controversial subject, so identifying that controversial subject wouldn't make any difference. It wouldn't be necessary, I think, to say to discuss the discharge of these members and settling the case for payment of monetary consideration.
What was the penalty on this?
They didn't identify one. The relief asked for was a declaration, excuse me, and an injunction. The injunction was denied on the basis that the board went back and disbanded the disbanding wasn't improper, so they couldn't enjoin the disbanding. The only other remedy was the award of attorney's fees. And the Supreme Court reversed the decision not to allow attorney's fees at all and remanded it to the Circuit Court for determination of an appropriate award.
Hmm.
All right.
Never gets easier, does it?
Well, no. Some of us are probably totally confused.
Yes, totally confused. Well,
my suggestion is that at least some members of the Supreme Court
would. I mean, it looks to me like it's iffy.
Mr. O'Brien.
Mr. Chair, I move the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A6, investment of funds, discussion or consideration of investment of public funds where competition or bargaining is involved, of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purpose of discussing investment of funds.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion's made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. Mrs. Zeger.
Aye.
Mrs. Booker.
Yes.
Mr. Weaver.
Yes.
Mr. O'Brien.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passed 5-0. We're now in closed session.
Adjourned to the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be it resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify, to the best of each member's knowledge, 1. Only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and 2. Only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. Ms. Seeger.
Aye.
Ms. Booker.
Aye.
Oh, man, you're on the phone. I was already counting to my 5. Mr. Weaver.
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. We are now back in open session. Do we have a meeting to adjourn?
Okay.
A meeting to adjourn.
I'll second.
We got a motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. Ms. Seeger.
Aye.
Ms. Booker.
Aye.
Mr. Weaver.
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
I'm already gone.
Chair votes aye. We are adjourned.